The following podcast contains adult subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
It's Sunday fun day in Juan's basement. Guess what I have hidden up my ass? You're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box with Juan, John, and Gabe.
We're recording this stuff now.
Now.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 35 of Thinking Outside the Long Box. I'm Gabe.
I'm Juan.
And hopefully we'll get John on the line at some point.
Because we miss him.
Yeah, I miss him.
Shut up. So I want to start the show off with this story.
Uh-oh.
Because this story is amazing. So, you know Nate, who doesn't listen? Fuck that guy. We're at work.
Fuck that guy.
We're at work yesterday, or day before yesterday, I guess. And he comes up to me, he's like, dude, I got to tell you this story. I heard this song in the car, and I really, really liked it. I went and told my wife. I was like, I really like this new Ed Sheeran song, who I assume is someone that's on the radio. I don't really know much about radio.
A white guy.
Yeah. And
He's good. He puts out good music. He's got good pipes.
Nice. Anyway, Nate's like, I really like this new Ed Sheeran song. And his wife's like, which one? Is it this one? And I don't know the names of any of the songs. And Nate's like, no, it's not that one. Is it that one? No. Is it that one? No. She's like, those are like the only three songs of his that are on the radio. So I really don't know which one it is. He's like, nah, I don't know. So they get in the car, right? The song comes on the radio. And Nate's like, that's it. That's the one. That's the song I really like. That's the Ed Sheeran song that I really like. And his wife just looks at him and goes, Nate, that's a Justin Bieber song.
I like that.
And so, like, there's this moment where I'm like, I look at him, I go, you're a believer? And this is like 6:30 in the morning.
Right.
We're not like, nobody's fucking really awake. And there was that split
second. That's why he's telling it to you. It's 6:30. There's that
split second realization where he's like, oh, I should not have told Gabe that story. So I spent the whole rest of the day just like,
that's awesome.
Don't stop believing. And fuck you, Gabe. It was amazing.
That's funny.
So,
side note, Ed Sheeran actually has a really good voice.
And I'll look it up.
He's a good guy. Like, there was this one.
You know him personally?
No. Well, I've seen, there was this girl. They were having, it's tiny. They were having an open mic at a mall or something, and he happened to be walking through it as this girl's up there singing his song, and he fucking walks up there with her, and she doesn't know, and he grabs a mic and he starts singing with her. It was just fucking cool.
He's got
a really good voice.
At first,
I thought he was. And this is going to sound totally fucking racist of me, but I thought he was black when I first heard him sing.
I feel like in music, if you sing soul or R&B music, that's actually the best compliment you can give.
Maybe.
That used to happen a lot, the Animals, who were a blues band. Everybody thought that the singer of the Animals was black until they saw him live and they were like, oh. And they would actually get booked at because at the time there were still segregated venues,
right?
And they would get booked at African American venues,
right?
And people would be like, "Wait, what's that white guy doing?
Is that guy clearing the stage for the next?
Is he on the road crew? I'm confused."
I was just like, "Oh, I didn't know he was white, but he's got I like the sound of his voice. He's got a good voice.
I'll have to check it out. Is it so? What kind of music is it?
It's lovey dovey kind of music,
kind of 90s esque R&B sort of stuff.
Some of it. I mean, obviously,
if you had to compare it to someone that I've heard of.
I don't know who you've heard of.
On a scale of Misfits to Slayer, where is he?
Zero. Okay. On the fucking left side of that scale. Misfits to Slayer. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that's what I figured. That's cool.
It's good. It's good love making music, bro.
Oh, dude, I love making love. It's my favorite thing. Probably ever.
We know, bro. You've populated a lot of this earth.
85 kids. Other things I really want to talk about that have to do with sex.
Let's do it.
So, because this show isn't really a show if we don't start off by talking about dildos.
That's true. Oh, God, yeah. So, I know where you're going with this.
So... So, all politics aside, this is not a political discussion.
But if you don't believe, if you don't if you're not believe what we believe, you're wrong.
Yeah. Hail Satan. No. So, you know, Cliven Bundy's kid, Ammon Bundy, he goes to this, you know, wildlife refuge with right. this other guy who, like, swore on the Constitution that he wouldn't see his kids for a couple weeks. Like, you know, they go and they take over this wildlife refuge in Oregon. Like, pretty much nobody wants them to be there. Like, right. the federal government isn't really doing anything about it because they don't want it to turn into, like, gunfight at right. OK Corral, like, right. whatever.
The funny thing about that, before you get into the where I know you're going, is the reason, like, part of the reason they're there is because this other family... they got sent to jail.
They got convicted of arson.
Right.
And like kind of after they got out of jail, the first time the federal government was like, oh yeah, those are actually terrorism charges. You got to go back
right,
to jail.
Right.
Like, which is really fucked up.
That's fucked up and it is what it is. But that family's like,
please go. Oh,
I don't
away.
Want them here either.
You know, they're doing their own thing.
Right.
You know, that's whatever. So this all starts out with snacks. Okay. They release this press release about, okay, when you think of the militia guys, like, you think of them as, like, super over-prepared for, like, the inevitable.
Preppers.
You know, they have tons and tons of, like, ammo and food and all this other stuff. But whatever they have at their house, they didn't bring any of that crap with them. So they sent out a thing, you know, we need supplies, we need socks, we need this, we need this. But then they made the mistake of asking for what, like, every, like, second grader wants. They said, send snacks. And, like, so immediately it turned into, like, this nightmare, because if they would have just not used the word snacks, nobody would have cared. Everybody would have been like, ah, those assholes, they're not even ready for this. And they would have dropped it.
Right.
But they were like, hey guys, send snacks. So the internet made a million memes and they put out the address of where to send the snacks to. So, you know, American people being what they were, they said, sure, I'll send you something to munch on. How about this 3-foot dildo? So one of the guys, like, I don't know his name, but he's like one of the it's Jim something. He's got like a really long last
name. I don't know
name,
their
but,
fucking name.
But he's the guy that like held up the Constitution and was like, I'm not going to see you kids for a while. It's like, dude, you can totally see your kids. Just go home.
Yeah.
Like, but they he made this video that's like, why are people sending us? You know, why would you waste your money on hating us? It's like, it's not hate. Like, it's just humor. Like,
funny.
We just think that's funny. Like,
what you're doing is hateful.
I personally have sent a bag of dicks to many of my friends because that shit's funny. But he says in the video, stop sending us this stuff. Mr. Militia Guy, you may not have the experience with the internet that the rest of us have, but when you tell the internet to not do something, it just means they're going to do it more. So literally like 3 days after they send, stop sending us dildos, stop sending us bags of dicks, the creator of Cards Against Humanity went on to Amazon and bought one of the most notorious Amazon products there is.
$1,600,
$1,600. He spent a lot of money on it. Those guys have a fuckload of money to blow, too. Like, for Christmas last year, they bought a whole island, and like you can buy into like their Christmas, like they do like a 12 days of Christmas and they give out all sorts of like random shit.
Huh.
Okay. And it's like a subscription thing, and tons and tons of people sign up for it, like thousands of people sign up for it. But the guys who run Cards Against Humanity, they bought an island and then they divided it into parcels amongst the thousands of people, and they're like literally like 2-inch square parcels. And they sent everybody like a deed to like their 2-inch
cool.
square like of island. So those guys have like way too much fucking money. They also, this year they were going to like tear up a Picasso and like send everybody like a little piece of
yeah,
a Picasso.
I can't.
People got
yeah,
real upset
yeah,
about
I can't,
that.
I can't condone that.
Yeah.
No.
It wasn't like one of his main paintings. It was like a sketch
still,
or something. People were
still,
just like, don't do that.
Yeah,
that's
what's
fucked
wrong
up.
With you?
Dude, they made Cards Against Humanity.
Still.
What's not wrong with them? But anyway, he went on to Amazon, bought the most notorious Amazon product, the 55-gallon drum of personal lubricant, and sent it to him. It's like, dude, don't talk to the internet.
Yeah.
Like, don't do it. If If you get on the internet troll list, stop. Just stop interacting with them. And then they'll get bored and they'll go away. But when you interact, they go, oh, yeah.
We're going to one-up this shit.
You told us not to. We're going to make it worse. Like, I saw another, somebody had done a screen cap of, like, it's called Bundy Ranch. And it's, like, Colin Bundy's Facebook page.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And it, some guy said, you know, you have to stop all these trolls.
I saw this one too. I know what you're talking about.
You know, you got to get rid of the memes. What if people are coming here for real information? Blah, blah, blah. And the Bundy Ranch response is, they put up the snack memes faster than we can take them down. I was like, yeah, there's a lot more. Yeah. The internet is
fucking millions
of
people. Like, yeah.
You're not, I don't know. It's amazing. So I feel like we should give out the address on there. It's like,
just
it's
send them things on our behalf.
I know. I'm going to look it up right now.
Oh, shit.
Let's see.
It's just, people listen to our show. They know we don't believe in nutty fucking craziness. And it's just a dumb cause. There's different ways to handle shit like this.
Oh, let's see. Where to send snacks. Watch. Let's go. Where to send snacks.
If she actually brings it up, it's going to be hilarious.
Oh, no. Yep. Best snacks to send to an Oregon militia. let's see. Boop, 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 boop. All right. So, if you would like to send, you know, like, 3-foot dildos or sword dildos or, you know, you have disposable income, want to send a 55-gallon drum on our behalf.
A glitter bomb.
Oh, my God. This is not a joke. If I got a glitter bomb in the mail, I would be so fucking furious. I hate when, like, I used to have this girlfriend when I was in high school, and she would make me little notes and whatever,
right,
and put them in, like, an envelope, and it was super sweet. I broke up with her because one time it was full of glitter, and I opened it up in my car, and it was fucking everywhere. And I was so pissed off. I was like, why would you give me your fucking envelope full of glitter? Like, why would you do that? So send them those. General Mail, John Ritzheimer or Blaine Cooper, Burns, Oregon, 9720. So, yeah,
that's funny.
You just send it to General Mail and, yeah, send them snacks. They told you not to. Man, by the time this comes out, this may or may not be over. It may not be, though.
It may not be.
Who knows?
The weird thing I don't understand is, from what I know, they go off of the farm, off of this ag place every once in a while.
Yes.
Why not just arrest them when they're out?
So two of them did get arrested this week. But so they're doing it really weird. Like the whole, so it speaks a lot of like how different sects of people get treated differently. Like there was a point in time where I had like a bright blue
sex,
mohawk,
like parts S-E-C-T-S. Of people, not not sex.
Like there was a point in my life where I had a bright blue mohawk, and like when I walked down the street, the cops gave me shit. Like you know, but these guys like take over a federal building, and they're like, well, because they've got like a fucking 1,000 guns with them.
So what? When they go off, the rest of them there.
Well, so that happened because they took one of like the fish and wildlife trucks.
Right.
They literally just took the truck, drove to Safeway, like to, I presume, to buy snacks. And like, you know, the cops were like, you can't steal trucks. Like, you know, and arrested two of the guys.
So stupid.
One of the guys, well, this is one of the other things I read. One of the guys, you know, because people have been sending them money and all sorts of stuff, you know, because they,
people are retarded.
Like, in spite of what we think, they have tons of supporters.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's tons of people that agree with them. But like, this.
Every wackadoo has supporters.
One of the guys, like, left the compound because he was arguing with one of the other guys, and they got, like, in a fight. And he's been taking the money that people are sending him, bought a hotel room, like, inside the town because they're outside of town.
Right.
And has been just, like, drinking it up, just, like, spending money on booze. It's like, dude, that's genius. Like,
thank you, guys. I'm going to be drunk forever.
I was like, man, I'm going to go take over, like a remote federal building in like the Rocky Mountain National.
You'll get shot.
Oh, that's true. I would get shot. I'm brown.
He does not pass. Look at him.
Dude, look how curly my hair is.
He's brown, and then he's fucking covered in tattoos. He'll be the first person to get shot.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, this is true. They'd be like, that punker that won't stop swearing at me fucking took over a federal building. I'm going to shoot him right in his butthole. But yeah.
Why is it
bubble? Dude.
Because there's already a hole there, so it's easy for the bullet to...
Whoop, I'm gone.
Bullet just... Bye. Just easy access.
Breakfast.
Oh, breakfast is ready.
Oh, breakfast ready.
What's ready
again?
Shut up.
Breakfast.
So, yeah, do we want to take a break and eat? Since we've literally talked about nothing. Except for dildos and beliebers.
That's funny.
Oh,
that's
my funny. God. That was, like, the best.
Or you want to take a break?
Yeah, let's take a break and eat, and then we'll come back.
I'm good with that. Gabe was 6 minutes late, so if we're late, it's not my fault.
This is Travis Magathire, horror writer of Up the River and the upcoming book by Ani from Caliber Comics, and you're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box.
Hey, Thinking Outside the Long Box listeners, this is Gabe from the podcast that you're listening to right now. I want to talk to you guys about the Sketchbook Shop at thesketchbookshop.com. They are currently helping our show by giving you a deal on awesome sketchbooks that range in price from $5 to $25. We have some of these here at the show. We've been using them for different stuff. They're super durable with great thick pages that you could do anything from take your class notes in to get sketches done at cons. Like, this is definitely some high quality stuff. So be sure to check them out at thesketchbookshop.com and use our secret password, Longbox, to get a discount. Thanks, guys.
We're recording whenever you want to put your phone down like a fucking teenager.
Hey, I'm trying to...
You know, I'm trying to record a podcast here.
And we're back! just a second. Jesus.
Seriously? What are we doing here? Hey, come on.
I'm trying to post a picture of us recording the podcast on our Instagram, at Outside Longbox on Instagram.
When did you snap a picture of us?
Just now.
Oh, fuck. Must have been a shitty picture.
Well, it's got you in it.
I wasn't even paying attention. Asshole.
That's what I'm saying.
God, I hate you so much.
I know. You're not fooling anyone. I know you want my dick.
Hey! Are you ready yet?
Yeah,
are we doing this?
We're doing this.
Are we doing this?
So let's talk about...
I don't want to talk about your bullshit.
No, let's talk about new stuff. That's all I was going to say. Yeah, we've already talked about most of my bullshit. Like,
I got a big old page here.
A big old page of bullshit.
Yeah, fucking bullshit, faux show.
Faux show.
I know this is on your list. Cloverfield.
Fuck yes.
So that was the... when it came on, I saw the title.
Yeah.
And then I watched the trailer, and I was like, is this really, like, a real movie? Like, I just didn't, because there's been nothing on this.
Zero news about it.
So when it came up, I thought it was fake. I thought it was just something a fan made, and it just threw me for a loop. And I was like, oh, what? John Goodman's in it. It's got to be fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Because I love John Goodman.
Me too. So here's the thing, like when Cloverfield first came out, J.J. Abrams had like this crazy like marketing thing,
right,
where you could like dig super deep into like the backstory and all the shitty, like crazy weird shit on the internet, like, and I dove right into it. Like,
right,
I bought it hook, line, and sinker. Like, I love giant monster movies already, so I was already pretty excited about it. And then like his viral marketing thing was awesome.
Right.
I loved it. Okay, and then I saw the movie, and like everybody else, I was just like, well, that was kind of garbage. I think I liked it better than most people did. Like, I didn't think it was great, but I didn't think it was like the worst thing they'd ever seen.
Right.
You know, there were some cool scenes in it, and I liked some of the nods to the marketing campaign that were in the movie. But I remember when I got out of the movie, I think I went and saw it with Steve, and I said to him, you know, it would be really cool if this was just like a part of it. If like next year he came out with like a sequel that was like a different perspective, or like filmed differently, you know, that showed a different part of the story.
Right.
Except for that, what, 6-7 years later? It wasn't next year at all. <You know? laughs> And so having that already in the back of my mind of, wouldn't it be cool if, you know, this, you know, found footage movie was just like a little part
right
of it, makes me really excited, because that's kind of exactly what I wanted them to do with Cloverfield. And, you know, it's got, like you said, it's got John Goodman in it, who I fucking love. Like, awesome. One of my favorite actors. Like, you're out of your element, Donnie.
Once he broke away from his stigma of being the dad in Roseanne, he's put on some fucking good shit.
Dude, he's amazing in, like, The Big Lebowski. Oh, yeah. He's amazing in, like, all those Coen Brothers movies. He's awesome in Trumbo. Like, he's probably one of...
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah. That's one of those Coen Brothers
movies. Yeah. That's a good movie. But whatever.
I'm excited to see it. Like, I'm genuinely just as excited to see this as I am to see Batman vs. Superman.
See, so the other part, like you said, of the another article I read is that it's not a sequel. Like you said, from what I understand, it's happening at the same time as everything else is happening.
It's almost like a cool, like, version of world building.
Right.
Where he's,
it's in the,
like,
same universe.
He's made this, like, universe where this event happens, and he's slowly coming out with different parts of what's going on around it. And, like, there's somebody said that the movie was already made and they just threw that title on it to drum up interest, and that the event only happens at, like, the very end, and, like, you know, it really has nothing to do with it. But that's exactly what I wanted.
Yeah.
I wanted it to be, like, just little snippets of what was going on. And maybe in 15, 20 years, we have, like, this canon of, like, 4 or 5 movies and this marketing campaign and these random ass websites that tell this whole story.
Right.
And it's one of the things I like about comic books, that, like, comic books now have story arcs that are put together, you know, these huge stories over, like, little snippets over, like, a long period of time. And I really, really enjoy that. And I really hope that that's what J.J. Abrams does with, like, the Cloverfield kind of thing.
I read that same article about the whole movie being pre-made, which is fine. I don't give a fuck what, you know, whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was funny, because I really was thinking something similar when I was watching it. I was like, well, this has Cloverfield in the name, but up to the very end of the trailer, you don't really, like, it doesn't reflect any of what the past film was. And then at the end, they're afraid to go outside and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, it is in the universe then. And that's cool. I don't need to see, you know, aliens or whatever they happen to be flying out of, you know, whatever. It's just cool to know that it's in that same universe. And you might get little snippets, like you said, at the end or throughout the whole, kind of just peppered in.
What would be really
cool. But it's
a
John Goodman.
That would be quite the feat.
But it drew me in because Goodman's in it, and it seemed very, like, I don't know if he's got these – it seems like he's got these people, like, as –
against
captured.
Their will.
Yeah, it just seemed really cool before I knew, holy shit, this has to do with Cloverfield too. Like, it was just cool.
What I would love the movie to be, like, and this is really cool, is that he's kidnapped these people against their will, and that – he's telling them it's not safe outside when it is, and then they escape, and then the event happens. Like, that's I think
he doesn't even know what's going on. That's funny.
Or it could be really cool where he's, like, one of the scientists that knows about, like, the Slusho and how, like, it's created these, like, creatures under the sea, and he knows that something's about to happen.
Right.
And he's, like, preemptively trying to protect some people.
Right.
Like, I mean, that'd be really
cool. It did at the end when he's trying to save them, for lack of whatever you might call that, because it did seem like they were captors, but he was doing it for a good reason. You know what I mean? He wasn't, like, enslaving them to be, like, sex slaves or anything crazy.
Yeah, he was trying
to protect
them.
He was more or less
them.
Trying to save their lives.
So here's what's – okay, real quick, before we go too much further, I want to say we got 2 comments on this, like, on our Facebook page, and I'm trying to more actively read that stuff. So my wife, Mel, said, I roll. I'm not sold. Partially because I saw the commercial for it at, like, 2 in the morning and, like, rolled over and was like, Mel, they're making a new Cloverfield movie. And she was like, shut the fuck up. So Christopher DeFilippis, who is one of our, like, podcast family, like, what would he be, like, our second cousin or something like that?
He might be he might be a first cousin.
Okay. He said, living in a bomb shelter post-kaiju apocalypse, I'm in. Love me some John Goodman. Oh, yeah, not John Candy. But can't wait for the Brandon Fraser cameo. because Brandon Fraser in the movie where he gets stuck in the bomb shelter and then comes out and there was no atomic war.
Oh, what is that called? His parents stuck him down there.
Yeah.
Yo, I vaguely remember that movie.
He said that.
It's like Kimmy Schmidt almost.
Yeah, which is, I cannot wait for the second season of that to come out, by the way. So in general, I'm really excited to see it. But I think a big part of it is that it is trailer making done well. Like, we're seeing, so I'm still super excited to see Batman versus Superman, but we're at this point where they're taking like snippets of like the film and just throwing it out there for people to see.
Right.
And I think they're at a point where DC's trying to show too much.
Well, you
like,
have to.
Let there be something that is secret. Like, let there be something that is going to happen that we don't see, that we're not going to know about.
What I'm saying in the sense that you have to, it's because they've gone, I don't know if it's just these big budget movies, but they've started showing trailers and such like a year or more ahead of the fucking movie. So you have to feed those people to keep people interested. This flew out of left field, and I think it comes out this year.
And that's what, it comes out in March.
Yeah,
it
like comes it's, out like it's in crazy. 2 months. Like, that's anticipation.
And I think that some of the bigger budget, like, superhero movies and stuff like that could really take a cue from this of show less. We know Doctor Strange is coming out. We're all very excited for that. But they haven't shown us fucking hardly anything about it. And that makes
just a few pictures
way more excited for it than a movie like Batman versus Superman, where I've seen cut scenes, I've seen like the leaked trailer, I've seen the trailer, I've seen the other trailer, I've seen the third trailer and the fourth trailer. It's like, leave something for us to be excited about. Like, and I, Cloverfield nailed it, because, you know, I saw what the article that I got on like CBR or whatever was like, you know,
I think I read the same one.
This trailer came out in front of the Benghazi movie, of like all things, the Michael Bay Benghazi movie, is like this trailer came out, what the shit. And it was literally, somebody had taken video of it, because people go and they like record trailers now because you kind of never know what you're going to see.
Right.
And somebody had recorded that trailer, or maybe went to like the next showing just to record the trailer or something, and then put it on the internet. And people were like, holy shit, where did this even come from? And the fact that the trailer wasn't really released until like the day afterwards, the trailer was released via like somebody just throwing it on the internet, made it like, it gave it that like cool, weird secrecy of viral marketing that the first one had, that drew me in so much. And this one, I kind of want to like hunt the internet and be like, oh, what have you hidden from me this time, J.J. Abrams, you know?
Well, when the first, I read one of the articles too, when the first one came out, when that first trailer hit, it didn't even have a name attached to it yet.
Yeah.
It was just the trailer, no name, no nothing, before a movie in the theater. And
it's had like,
you went out going, what the fuck was that? Like it looks cool, but I don't even know what this movie is.
And it's had like, the project's had like three names or something like that, which I need to go look up those names, because I'm sure JJ has like hidden something on the internet about him. Like,
well, it's cool, because I think a part of the reason he was able to get away with it was because everybody was had his focus on Star Wars. He could have done fucking whatever and nobody would have paid attention, because he was doing Star Wars. You know what I mean?
Dude, it's awesome.
It's like, cool.
I'm,
it's different.
I'm super stoked about what he did. And it's cool, because in reality, it's a super small movie. Like, it's a tiny set.
I think $5 million was the budget, like, or something like that.
It's a tiny set, like three actors. Like, dude, that's genius. Like, it's a genius move. That guy's going to go down as like kind of like our generation's like American director, you know? I don't know.
He's doing well. He's doing well.
Let's see. What do I have next?
I got another cool tidbit that I'm sure is on your list too.
Go for it.
Punisher.
That is my next thing.
So before the Punisher makes his way to Daredevil season 2, they are announcing that it's almost a for sure thing he's going to have his own show on Netflix.
Yeah.
Which is cool. It's super cool.
I'd love to see a Punisher show. I'd love to see it not be so like wooden as like the Punisher movies have been. Like the Thomas Jane Punisher movie was like real tough to watch. Like
Barenthal's a pretty good actor though.
See, that's what I'm thinking. Like I loved him in The Walking Dead, and you went from loving him to hating him.
Right.
Like in the span of like a season and a half, he nailed that. You know, and the Punisher I think is that kind of nuanced character where where you like him because you sympathize with him because it's awful that his family was murdered. Spoiler alert. But it's hard to reconcile that, like, the Punisher is a murderer. Like, you know, when he first showed up in Spider-Man and stuff, he was a villain. Like, he's not a good guy in his white go-go boots.
They're pretty.
They are pretty. Belt.
No, I'm excited to see where that goes. In this day and age, I mean, Netflix can't be spending that much money to do these things. You know what I mean? So, and fucking tons and tons of people watch them.
Dude, people are just throwing money at Netflix. I know at least three people that have signed up for Netflix just to watch Daredevil and Jessica Jones. And you add the Punisher, who's like a top tier, like Marvel character into there. And it's, I mean.
Well, then you got Iron Fist coming and Luke Cage coming and Defenders coming. I mean, it's going to be really cool.
Yeah, it's super awesome. I like what they're doing. I'm still a little nervous about at what point does it become too much? Like
never.
Not for us. I'm willing to watch it, but at what point does it become too much for like on the production side, on the money side, where they're like, well, you know, let's skimp a little here, and like this series looks shitty compared to like those series. It makes me a little nervous. Like, I think part of that is because I attempted to watch the Man-Thing movie a couple nights ago. That is awful. Do not watch that. Like, I love Man-Thing. I love swamp creatures. Like, that shit is awesome. I made it through, like, the first, like, probably 45 minutes of that movie. No Man-Thing. Like, through the whole thing. I'm just like, how is this a Man-Thing movie? Like, there is no Man-Thing in this movie, man. Fuck you guys.
It's like Fantastic Four. Doom only shows up for like 10 minutes.
Oh, dude, it was hard to watch. Like, the acting was bad. The special effects were bad. Like, it was real bad. Like, there are some Marvel movies out there. You know, Marvel is making, like, the cream of the crop when it comes to superhero movies as far as
even
I'm concerned.
Even TV shows, I think.
Yeah. I mean, even they're, like, kind of – I want to say throwaway, but they're not, like, really throwaway. They're just kind of, like, they're not as popular one. Agent Carter is really good.
See, the thing is, it's more when you say not as popular, I think it is because it was only supposed to have one season. No, it wasn't ever supposed to go beyond a second season.
But you don't hear like a lot of buzz about it. Like it's good, it's really good,
right?
But you don't hear people aren't like, oh shit, Agent Carter. You know, people are like, oh man, Agent Carter, that's cool. Whereas people are like, I'm gonna drop a deuce in my pants because the Punisher season. You know, like there's even their like kind of lesser properties are getting treated really, really well right now. Before like the first phase of Avengers, there are some like trash Marvel movies. like Man-Thing, real bad. Real, real bad. Both those Ghost Rider movies like hurt my heart. Like,
see,
dude,
I'm not gonna say they're good. I like Nick Cage. I think he's okay.
What
I don't.
Is wrong
I like
with
Nick
you?
Cage. We just watched both National Treasure movies.
See, those
the other
movies
day.
Are awesome.
I like him.
Here's the thing. Nick Cage is okay when somebody doesn't tell him to act. When he just like is kind of being a dude, he's all right. But when somebody's like, I really need you to put some emotion into this, he like he takes a bunch of drugs and puts way too much emotion into it. Like his Bad Lieutenant remake. God damn it.
It just depends on the movie. I don't know that I can say, you know, even Al Pacino makes, you know, kind of shitty movies every once in a while.
I'm not going to lie.
You know what I mean?
Really big Al Pacino.
But that's what I mean. I don't know of one actor where I'm like, every fucking movie that guy does is amazing.
Benedict
like,
Cumberbatch.
See, I don't know what movies he's ever done.
He's mostly just in Sherlock.
And when I think of Sherlock Holmes, I think personally of Robert Downey Jr.
Those
I don't
movies
think
are
of,
really good.
Yeah.
I don't
think of Cumberbatch. I think Robert Downey Jr. was a fucking
sit down and watch Sherlock and your opinion will completely change. Dude, they're so good.
I didn't say they weren't good.
And they have that Hobbit guy in it as Watson, and
there's
awesome.
A lot of Hobbits. I don't know which one that Hobbit guy
he's
is.
He's one of the Hobbits. I don't know shit about people's names. Come on. Oh, man. All right. Let's see. You had Punisher. I had Punisher. So this probably won't come up on your radar because it's like super comic book author specific. And that's why
fine.
I dug into it. Well, no. I mean, there's like random writers that I really like. So there's going to be a Star Wars Poe Dameron series that Charles
cool.
Soule is going to take on, because it's not like Charles Soule doesn't have like 35 other fucking comic books and a law office to run. So like,
is he a lawyer?
Yeah, he's a lawyer.
Huh,
like he's
cool.
a lawyer and writes like 600 to 700 comic books a day. Like, I mean, he's one of those people that you like look at his life and think to yourself, I suck at life. Like, I barely managed to raise 4 kids and work a real job and do this podcast.
When you're a lawyer, you get good money typically.
I guess.
It gives you time to write comic books.
Then why would he? But no, but he's got to do the lawyering too.
Well, of course.
Like, he's at work all day. Lawyers work all day, don't they? I don't know. I'm not a lawyer.
I don't think
so.
I think you could take like one big case and skate for a little bit.
You think so? I don't know.
I guess it depends on what kind of lawyer he is. I don't know.
Do we know any lawyers?
I don't know any lawyers.
I've needed lawyers, but I don't think I know any lawyers.
Oh, man. Unless you're like a defense attorney, then you probably work every single day.
I don't know. I really couldn't tell you what lawyers do beyond like money stuff.
They cost me a fucking lot.
They cost a loss a lot. Oh, man.
What does he do? What comic books does he write?
What comic books does Charles Soule write?
Yeah.
Jeez. What comic books does Charles Soule write?
Seriously?
No, that's not what I said. No. I didn't say Charles Jewelry.
Gabe's horrible at life. He doesn't even know. He's talking about this writer, and he doesn't know.
I want to give you like a more comprehensive list. Like, I know
the zero you've told me.
No, beyond the ones that I just know off the top of my head. So he's done Superman, Wonder Woman, Letter 44, Death of Wolverine, Strange Attractors. So for Image, 27, Skull Kickers. For DC, he's done Swamp Thing, which is the one I was going to tell you because that's
the new
thing.
One?
No.
No.
One of the older runs. Red Lanterns, Action Comics, Green Lantern. I already said Superman, Wonder Woman, Superman Doomed. For Marvel, he's done Thunderbolts, She-Hulk, Inhuman, Original Sins, Death of Wolverine, Death of Wolverine Logan Legacy, Death of Wolverine Weapon X Program, Wolverines, Uncanny Inhumans, Inhumans, Adeline Rising, Civil War, Star Wars Lando.
That was a good book, too.
He's written Tarzan and Pathfinder for Dynamite. I said Letter 44 already. Mm-hmm. I mean, he writes tons and tons of books.
Nice.
Like, you just kind of see – he's like Cullen Bunn, where you just kind of see his name all over the place, you know? I mean, it's cool. Like, I keyed into him because he wrote, like, a really – awesome New 52 run on Swamp Thing. So, and was like,
Original Sin was, it was okay. It was really weird.
It was weird. Like, I have all of it,
me
but
too.
I've been trying to sell it. So, it really says anything. But I am trying to pare down my collection into like kind of what I specifically want to collect.
Right.
So I'm trying to like get rid of like the extraneous stuff that I kind of have gathered so that I can buy the cool things that I want.
Nice.
I got picked up a copy of Black Cat Mystery 31, which is like seriously, I think it's my oldest comic book. It's from 1952.
Nice.
So it's really cool. So I'm trying to find the thread about this so that I can say some of the comments.
Oh, I think I know where you're going. Matt's post?
Yes.
That was on my list, too.
So, Matt posted something to our page, and I always have a...
Hello, Matt.
There we go. Do, 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 do. Man, where did it go?
Somebody just posted in it today. You should be able to...
I don't know. Comment on video you shared. Cut this part out.
Don't tell me what to do.
God damn it. You just ruined it.
Is this really taking you this long?
Well, I can only find the one. I can only find the thing about feminism. But I don't want to...
January 15th at 7:33 a.m.
Well, if you have it, you read them. Is this the Deadpool, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so Juan's going to edit that part out.
Oh, hey.
And cut. Oh, that's a good segue for the cut.
So you were leading us into something.
So Matt posted a thing about a petition that's going around on the internet because the internet likes to be upset about things.
Yes.
So some
stupid girl.
Somebody is like upset that Deadpool is going to be rated R because then they can't take their kid to go see it. Because let's face it, like the comic book, though it's rated teen, gets read by like preteen boys for the most part. Like,
I think they're like, oh, he said fuck.
Most of the fans of Deadpool that I know are like male between the age of like 11 and maybe like 28, like tops. Like probably closer to like 25, like even younger than Juan.
What?
Juan is like a 15 child to me. But so the petition going around is make a PG-13 cut of Deadpool. Yeah, exactly. Eyes to the back of the head. Like, if you don't like what they're making, don't watch it. Like, if you don't want your kid to see that, don't watch it. Like, if they are bugging you about it to the point where you like, we need to change the movie so that I can take them to see it, the answer should be no.
No.
Like,
you don't get to control that.
What I think what Matt said is like, art is art. Like, whether it's highbrow art, like a Picasso painting that the guys in Cards Against Humanity want to tear up, or lowbrow art, like
Cards Against Humanity.
Cards Against Humanity. It's still art. Like, there's a creative process where someone has come up with an idea, created it, taken it to fruition to share it with the world. If you don't like that, you don't have to participate in it. Yeah. And that's too bad. If you want it to be different, make your own. Fuck yourself. Like,
or give up the millions of dollars it took to create the movie.
That's what I'm saying. You know what I mean? If you want to force somebody to make it different, the onus isn't on that person. They've made what they're going to make. Right. They've created what they're going to create. The onus is on you. If you don't like what they've done, you need to make your own. And if you can't afford it or you can't figure out how to do it, that's not my problem.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to sign a petition. Like, what's going to happen is I'm going to get to see Deadpool in the theater at least once when I go see it to see if it's okay for my son to watch.
Right.
And potentially twice when if I'm like, yeah, that's not too bad, and I go take him to see it.
Right.
Like, and it totally depends. Like, the swearing, I'm not really too worried about. The violence, it'd have to be pretty over the top. Like, the sex is...
Because he watches Walking Dead.
Yeah, he watches Walking Dead.
It can't be that bad.
The sex, as long as it's not, like, overly, overly gratuitous, I'm not too super concerned about
right.
it. So, because, let's face it, like, he's...
He's a boy.
He's and a 12-year-old yeah, boy, I was gonna say he's and fucking the internet almost a teenager. Exists. Like, he's seen he's boobs. Seen,
yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like,
I mean, he's seen his dad with his shirt off. He's seen parents' hands.
That's funny. It's just, it bothers me because it's very pretentious to say, you are going to do this and I'm going to make a petition to force your hand. Like, that's not, it's, you're not entitled to tell these people who have spent millions of dollars doing this that they should change their whatever the fuck it is for you. You're not entitled to that. You can have your opinion, and if you don't want your little kid to watch it, then he can't watch it. Tell him no. What kind of parent are you that you fucking bend to the will of an 8-year-old
to it go just, watch a Deadpool
it makes
movie.
No sense. Yeah. Like, you can't, you're not teaching your kid you're just teaching him that with a piece of paper and whining enough, you might be able to change something.
No, you're not. It's not might. They're teaching their kid that if you whine and bitch enough,
right.
you will get what you want. Right. And when my kid whines and bitches at me, I tell him, no. If you would have asked me politely, the answer probably would have been yes. But because you're whining about it, go to your room. Like, it's not – there's a point – like in our culture where there's certain segments that never say no to their kids. And you see it, like you see it like at the store, you see it in school. There's like always that like little coven of children that are like, that get whatever they want right. just by being obnoxious. And I don't think that's new. I think I grew up with a lot of those kids. My parents didn't do that. And so there's points where I have to defer my pleasure, you know, in buying something and watching something, because I understand that sometimes I just don't get what I want.
Right.
You know, as an adult, that's like a really important lesson to know, because let's face it, I really, really, really want a Bugatti Veyron. No amount of whining is going to put a Bugatti Veyron in my garage. Like, you know, there's a level that it's not going to happen. No matter what you do, no matter how much you whine, no matter how much you bitch and complain, it's not going to happen. I think the appropriate response for the director in this is to cut the movie down to like 10 minutes and release a G-rated version. You know, if you want to sanitize the movie for your kids, wait till it's on TV and watch it then.
The shitty thing is the girl who actually put the petition together is not in the family. The family came out and they said what they were going to say, and she, you know, the mom said, you know, hopefully they put a PG-13 version out or blah blah blah. It's a YouTube lady who might be a mother herself, I don't know, who took it upon herself to further these people's stupid cause and make them feel that much more entitled. And I fucking hate it. Like, it's just as stupid. You're perpetuating something that you know is not going to happen. They're not going to come out and fucking release a PG-13 version of this movie. What probably costs fucking a ton of money to go. It's not just me going on my computer and going, all right,
typing
done.
PG-13, and then it changes everything.
You have to pay people to do these things. You have to pay people to reshoot certain things that will fit into that PG-13 thing.
The genius idea would be to pass the cost onto the consumer so that the Blu-ray of like the rated R version is, you know, like 25 bucks, and then like the Blu-ray of like the PG-13 version is like 68 bucks, you know, like, because it costs all that time and money and effort to cut a movie. Like, when they take a movie to the MPAA and the MPAA says you're going to get an R rating if you don't cut out this and this, it costs a shitload of money to fix that.
Right.
So when a movie decides we're going to be rated R, they just go for it because they can get away with pretty much everything. If they're not going to step back to that PG-13, like when they make a movie with the intention of making it PG-13, they know that there's certain limits that the MPAA like kind of sort of imposes. And so they make the movie to that.
Right.
And then the MPAA says, well, there's a little bit too much of, you know, maybe less ball kicking and say shit one less time. And so they go in, they have to only cut little bits, you know, because they've made the movie intentionally to be that rating. And there's a lot less effort put into it. If you say, we're going to make a rated R movie, you go for it.
Right.
And then to propose, well, let's cut it down to rated R. How many times in the fucking trailer is there like a rated R scene? Like, they're swearing in the trailer? Like, the trailer's a Red Band trailer. Like, they're swearing in it. There's headshots in it. There's dick shots in it. He says, I'm unfuckable, which is like a sex reference and a swear word. And it's like part of the plot. Like, I mean, they would literally have to remake the entire movie.
But I think what people don't understand is that it's not like I said, it's not as easy as just going to your computer and editing. You have to fucking rehire for a certain amount of days a whole fucking crew. People that do the lights and people that do the makeup and people that handle cameras. It's not just five people who can come together and be like, okay, we're going to reshoot these scenes. It's fucking probably hundreds of people on set
just for more than a day. That you would have to reshoot scenes makes it like it's a stupid, preposterous notion. Dude, they should make the airplane version of it where they just take out all the swears. Like, I'm unfudgeable.
I know, that's a great movie. I just don't. Her name is Grace. I think her name is Grace Randolph. She's a YouTuber, and I'm out. I don't agree with you perpetuating an 8-year-old's, you know, dream of trying to see Deadpool because it's rated R.
Should an 8-year-old be watching Deadpool anyways? The reality is, an 8-year-old should not be reading Deadpool written by fucking Brian Posehn of all people. Like, an 8-year-old shouldn't be reading Deadpool. Well, okay, the right 8-year-old it's okay.
See, here's where I part with you, which is not, you know, there's nothing wrong with either way we raise our kids. I was raised as the, I'm the youngest of five, so I never got censored from anything. My parents let me watch, I don't remember a time where there was like porn going on my TV or anything.
That would be weird.
Right. But I was never like, oh, he can't watch that. He's too little. You know what I mean?
Daddy time, go away.
But I watched whatever my brothers watched. They were watching rated R movies. We were watching all kinds of shit. And for me personally, I think the more I expose my child to, you know, I'm not sitting there, you know, putting his face in front of the screen and going, you're going to watch this.
Right.
But if he wants to eat zombies eating people and he doesn't get freaked out by it, I don't give a fuck.
So the difference is I don't really censor what my kids watch or read either. The difference is Ashton, this conversation is very specifically about Ashton.
Right.
Because Ashton is a fucking enormous Deadpool fan.
Right.
He wants to see the movie.
Right.
He's told me he wants to see the movie. He's seen all the trailers, including the Red Band trailer. He thinks it looks hilarious. He's in. He wants to see it.
Right.
There is a very sensitive little boy inside of Ashton.
Oh, yeah.
Like, as tough as he likes to project himself, he, of all my kids, is the one that, like, gets freaked out the easiest. We were sitting down. This is a great story. Oh, my God. He's going to be so embarrassed when he becomes an adult and starts listening
to the show.
So he doesn't listen to this show because he has zero interest. He's all, yeah, my dad talking about bullshit. I hear that all the fucking time. So we're sitting down on the couch, all right? It's me, it's Mel, it's Bailey, and it's Ashton. And Bailey loves fucking ghost shows. She
right.
loves watching ghost story shit. Like, she loves ghosts. It's like one of her favorite things.
Right.
So we put on this, like, it's kind of like an Unsolved Mysteries about ghost stories, you know? And Bailey, Ashton's about ready to go to bed, but he wants to stay up and watch it. And Bailey goes, it's scary. This is like 3 or 4 years ago,
right,
before he was like a little more into scary stuff. Bailey goes, it's scary. I was like, Ashton, you can stay up and watch this with us. If it's too scary, you just let us know and we'll change, put something else on.
Right.
Right. So we get it on. The show goes on. It's Phantom Hitchhiker story.
Okay.
We were driving down the road and we saw her and she was hitchhiking and
she loves something in my car.
You know, we pulled over to pick her up and she got in the car and they show like this kind of like, you know, wispy looking lady walking down the side of the street. And Ashton goes, too scary. And we turn, you know, Bailey immediately is like, God damn it, Ashton. Like, just fucking furious because she just wants to watch his show, you know. I was like, Bailey, we'll put something else on. Ashton can watch like a half an hour long show and then go to bed. And then we'll put your fucking ghost show on. Calm the shit down. Like, you have to remember that Ashton's younger than you, you know. So I would go to see Deadpool just because I know that my son is like kind of sensitive,
right,
and that there might be things in it that either would gross him out, like too much kissing, he's going to get grossed out and I'm not going to hear the end of it. You know,
you took me to that fucking kissing movie.
Exactly. Fucking hate kissing movies, Dad. Like, you know, he's very much the little boy in a Princess
right.
Bride. You know, if there's things that are like too gratuitously violent, like it's going to get stuck in his head,
right,
and he's going to keep thinking about it, and eventually he's going to get kind of worked up about it, you know. So I know that about him. So that's why I watch things in advance. It has very little to do with like the content. Like,
right,
I'm not really too super concerned. Like, you let Johnny watch The Walking Dead. We don't let Hannah watch it because when she sees zombies, she gets panicky.
Right.
And like,
that's what I'm saying.
I don't think it has much to do with like sheltering our kids. It has
no,
more
no,
to do
no,
with,
of course not.
No, I know. I'm just kind of explaining. Like, it has more to do with us knowing like our kids' limits,
right,
and protecting them when we know it's going to explicitly like be, you know, tense for them.
Right.
Like, they don't need to go through that for entertainment.
Of course.
Like, they need to know that things are scary, like trucks, so that, you know, they look both ways when they cross the street.
Right.
You know, but they don't need to be specifically tense about zombies,
right,
because there's not fucking zombies wandering around, you know. So,
and that's,
except for during the zombie crawl, and that's a totally different thing.
And that's
hardly bite you at all.
That's why, I mean, he watches his cartoons. I try not to, you know, unless it's been a really stressful day and I just want him to get out of my fucking face, I try not to let him sit and watch TV all day long.
Mm-hmm.
So he's you know, he's really good about just coming in and then going to his room or watching TV or whatever. So I'll have it on. And if he wants to sit down and watch it, he can sit down and watch it. If it's gets too crazy, okay, go to your room and go play.
That's kind of, you know what I mean? That's kind of how we are, but we know that there's like specific things that bug the kids. Right. So we're just like, hey, we're going to watch this. Like, you know, it's 8 o'clock at night. This is mommy daddy time. Get the fuck out of here. Like, we're going to watch this. Like,
and he's just recently, like, I've never seen him get tense at much things. Just recently he started sleeping with a flashlight, like a little flashlight, and then he's got a little remote, like somebody for his birthday, I think, he's got a moon that sits up on his wall, and he clicks a button, and the moon changes in the different phases.
Nice.
Like, it'll go from, you know, from a quarter moon to a full moon, and he can just click through the phases. So he likes having both of those things on him. I don't know if that's, like, the beginning of him starting to be afraid of the dark, which is pretty fucking normal for a little kid.
Yeah.
But I've never seen him, like, get too tense about anything, and that's why I'm, you know, it's like, okay, you know, none of this stuff really bothers him yet. We'll see, you know, where this lands him. Because, like I said, I was watching The Exorcist when I was, like, 4 or 5, which, looking back now, is not very scary. But when you watch it when you're 4 or 5, it's like, what the fuck is going on? Like, holy shit. It was just normal for me, and that's why I don't want him to have, like, any kind of weird stigmas about, you know, Alicia wasn't allowed to watch rated R movies until she was, like, 18 or something like that.
That's and it's a little
fucking
weird.
Crazy. Like, I don't, like, she's never seen movies that I think are commonplace, you know what I mean? Like,
see, my wife has that because she just didn't watch movies, which is always really funny to me, because she's like, yeah, I've never seen Ghostbusters. I'm like, what the shit, you know? she always comes up, I'll be talking about some, like, just staple of 80s film, and she'll be like, yeah, I've never seen that. I'm like, oh my god, we're home watching that, like, right now.
No, but it's just going back to this fucking Deadpool thing, I just don't like it. I don't like that adults are perpetuating something that is never going to happen. You're getting this kid's hopes up, and you know, because he wants to go see this movie.
It's not going to happen
for nothing. It's your fault that little boy is going to be crushed more than if the mother would have just said, "No, you can't see it."
Because, like, it's rated R.
Yeah, why is that so hard for a parent to just say no? Like, that just doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't make sense to me either, because I say no to my kids all the time. What are some of the comments? Probably largely all the same thing we just said.
Well, there's a few that are different. And I see Michael Young said, I don't read Deadpool, but does he curse a lot in his books? Because I know if it's not for the nudity. So if they take away the F-bombs, how does that change the movie? Plenty of violent type of movies that get PG-13 labels. This movie was made for a 13-year-old to stop at Hot Topic. I want to see a valid point for why it has to stay rated R.
So there's a lot of aggressive violence in the Deadpool comic book. So when you look at comic books, it's rated teen plus, which typically is intended for, like, 16, 17 year olds.
Right.
Like, it's meant for people that are, like, older teenagers, like high school age kids. A lot of kids that are, like, Ashton's age read it, but the appropriateness of it isn't necessarily there.
Right.
It just, obviously, that's up to the parents' discretion. It's not made, for, it's those, not made for those kids.
Right.
So there is quite a bit of swearing in it, which is edited out, though, because it's a Marvel book, right, and Marvel does that. But
you know
what he's saying, like, unless you're a flipping idiot, you know. there's tons of gratuitous and gross violence,
right,
like decapitations, heads exploding, that sort of thing, which in a comic book is hilarious and cartoony still,
right,
whereas in a movie it's gross and it makes it rated
R. A little
R,
bit more real.
But I feel it needs to stay in because that's the character of Deadpool. Like, Deadpool is that he's campy, he's mouthy, but, like, he shoots people in the brain pan.
Right.
He cuts off their heads. You know, he's a super aggressive fighter. So
my reply to Michael wasn't that it would be hard or easy to change the rating, because it won't be, you know, but it might be, who knows? You know, I don't think it would be. But my reply is, at what point, it has nothing to do with the movie itself. At what point do you keep giving in to people like this. Like, it has nothing to do with the actual movie, but you, what you're suggesting is that I give in to people who want to whine about something that I've created and I've spent tons of money on because they want something different, not right. because of what I, the creator, want. What you're suggesting is that I compromise my work for one or two people who want it some other way. You know, when the interview came out, we had this exact same discussion.
Right.
No, they shouldn't change that fucking movie because that's what they set out to make.
That's it's the their point of the movie.
Money. Yeah. Like, you, who are you to say that they can't do that in a society where we claim to be free, to have those freedoms to do whatever we want like that? They have to deal with the repercussions, but they're still free to do it. And you don't have a stance to say they can't. It just doesn't make sense.
Right.
You know, because let's say this does go through and they change it. What's to stop the next parent from saying, well, this movie needs to be PG-13?
What if we need Avengers, you know, Infinity Gauntlet to be PG?
Right.
Because my 4-year-old wants to go see it, who at the time will probably be 6 by then. But, you know,
it's just where that does
doesn't
it
make
end?
Sense. Where does it end? Like, if we keep like whining and fussing about it, at what point does somebody just have to say, no, I don't care? Like, and I assume that the people making Deadpool are taking that stance. Like,
right.
We made a Deadpool movie.
I think
everybody's excited to see it except for like these three people.
Right.
Middle finger to you three people.
I think Ryan Reynolds would have been happy if this movie would have got the NC-17 rating. It's just that's the point. The most of this fan base wanted this movie to be over the top because that's Deadpool.
I remember before it was made, there were petitions to make it rated R.
Right.
Like,
but Ryan Reynolds had already come out and said, we're trying to make it rated R. You know what I mean? No matter what. He had this whole thing with Mario Lopez where he hit him in the back of the head and he's like, no, this movie's going to be rated R. You know what I mean? It's just stupid. It's just whiny. I just can't stand it.
Any other comments? What other comments?
There's a lot of comments.
See, that's why I wanted to bring this one up. This one got tons of comments.
Hiram. Hopefully I'm saying that. Hiram Yates.
It's probably Hiram Yates.
It might be Hiram. I'm sorry if you listen to this, but I doubt you do.
Don't say that.
It should remain rated R because the movie that the filmmakers made got an R rating. To demand that they change the film to fit someone else's needs is to ask an artist to redo their artwork they've been working on for years because it doesn't suit your tastes. Could a Deadpool movie be made with a softer rating? Almost certainly. However, these filmmakers created their interpretation of the source material and it came out to an R rating. So what valid point is there to keep it R rating, you ask? Because that's why they made it. Film is an art and art shouldn't be censored. If they wanted a PG-13 rating but received an R rating and wanted to recut and self-censor their film, that'd be one thing. However, they wanted to create their interpretation of the character how they saw fit without restriction and created an R-rated film. So it shouldn't be changed because the creators don't want to change it. If you don't find that to be a valid enough point, then I apologize. But I feel like artistic freedom shouldn't be compromised for anyone. You can disagree with someone's art, but to demand it to be changed is fatuous. Facetious?
Facetious.
No.
Let's see.
F-A-T-U-O-U-S.
Fascious? Maybe it's supposed to be fascist?
Maybe. I don't know what that word is. Fatuous.
I'm just going to say one thing, Hiram. Since you agree with us, of course you're right.
This Ben Miller says, my son is 9 and loves Deadpool, and I will even be taking him to see the movie when it comes out.
Yeah. See, and like I said, that's kind of my attitude towards it. My son's 12. You know, I'm going to see it first just in case it's, you know, got like full penetration right. in it or something, you know.
Highly doubtful, but yes, yeah. I know where you're going.
Maybe. but yeah, I'm just saying.
Eric Ty, I don't get why they could/should do this. Not all movies, even superhero ones, are made for children. Just like not all toys are made for children either. There are opportunities to create movies/storylines for this character that are child appropriate, but it doesn't mean this one has to be. This is just silly. It's like saying, my kid really likes clowns. Can you please make Pennywise from It a little more lovable so my kid can enjoy it?
What's not lovable about Pennywise?
We all float down here. Everything floats down there.
That's super, like, I feel like you could recut It to make it, like, super family friendly. Like, that would be amazing.
I think most of the people, at least the people who are in the comic book club, they share the sentiment. I see where Michael's coming from. And again, for me, it isn't the ease of changing it from R to PG. It's the point.
It's the principle. It's the idea that, like, these people went out of their way to create something. What they created, like Hiram said, what they created came out with an R rating.
Right.
And like you said, like, Ryan Reynolds went out of his way to say, we're going to make this, you know, hardcore. Like,
right.
We're going to make a Deadpool movie that, like, is reflective of Deadpool's character, which is to say there will be chimichanga consumption and swear words and things blowing up. So they went for it,
yeah,
and they made exactly what they wanted to make. And so fuck you guys.
By all means, if that YouTuber and that family want to make a PG-13 Deadpool, go right ahead. Like, what is stopping you?
Besides the millions and millions of dollars,
you
probably just
shit
to buy the license.
Right. But you want to talk shit about somebody who's going out and doing what they want to do? Go do it. Like,
I'm just saying, what could be more family friendly than a Disney movie?
Yeah, exactly.
Is Deadpool the new Disney princess?
He'd wear a tutu,
I think. He'd totally wear a tutu. Pretty sure he's actually done that in an issue too.
Oh, man. I don't know. We had some thoughts on it, but it is what it is. Whatever. We can move on to the next subject. It irritates me.
So this broke on CBR as we were talking just now.
Uh-oh.
Jessica Jones has been greenlit for a season 2.
Yes!
So,
woo!
That's awesome. I still haven't had the chance to watch it.
That's because you're an a-hole.
No, it's because I got sucked into something different. So
you do get sucked into things a lot.
Oh, yeah. I get sucked all the time. I hope my wife didn't hear me say that. Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, it's just that Marvel machine kind of like steamrolling its way through Netflix
right.
in like a really genius way. So
I love Jessica Jones. It's fucking amazing. I mean, I've sang its praises, and Marika's the same. You know, she likes it too. I've sang its praises for probably the past 5 episodes. It's just an amazing show. And that one has over-the-top sex in it. No penetration, but there is a lot of sex in that one, in that series.
It's interesting because people that aren't really into Marvel stuff that I know, like, from work and, like, just kind of friends and stuff have come up to me and been like, hey, do you watch that Jessica Jones show? I'm like, I haven't watched it yet. I just haven't had a chance. They're like, I thought you were a comic book guy. You should really watch it. I'm like, I know that. Like,
I thought you were a comic book guy.
I'm like, A, you're not allowed to judge me because fuck you. I watch a lot of shit just for this stupid show. Like, not stupid
Come
show.
Come on, man.
I'm just saying.
We're past that.
I watch a lot of shit for this show that I don't necessarily really want to watch, you know? But like Suicide Squad, for example, I'm going to go see.
It's going to be amazing.
It's going to be garbage.
No.
Anyways, but like, I just haven't gotten around to it, and I'm excited to watch it, and I really want to watch it, but people are like, how have you not watched it yet? I've got 2 short boxes of fucking comic books to read. That's how. Like, I don't just sit and watch TV all night. Like,
I put those to so what I've done is I don't have that many to read because I kind of – so I have a stack probably 20 deep on top of my headboard. So when we go to bed, if Alicia falls asleep, I'll grab one and just read it in bed.
See,
and then I'll put it on the floor.
I do kind of the same thing. So, like, my comic book room is in the basement, and, like, next to my computer I have the 2 boxes of stuff I haven't read yet.
Right.
And so what I keep putting my phone on my wallet and it keeps vibrating and falling off and it's driving me fucking crazy. But what I do is I'll bring a stack upstairs and I'll read them and then take pictures and post them on Instagram and then flip them upside down.
Right.
And like when I get through the pile, I take those downstairs to put into like the short boxes, like the storage short boxes.
Right.
And I pull out, you know, 15, 20 more books and bring them upstairs. The problem is that since my pull is with John at Hall of Justice Comics, Hall of Justice Comics and Collectibles.com.
I think it's HOJ
Comics and Collectibles.com.
Yeah. I don't fucking
Whatever.
Know. Go, it's just Google
just go
that
to,
shit.
You listen to this show, you know where to go. God damn it. But since I get my comics the way I do from John, where we see him, you know, every like 5, 6 weeks or whatever, I came home with almost a short box worth of pull.
Right.
Like,
oh yeah.
So like I went, I had pared it down to about a half a box. I had about a half a box left. I was like, dude, I'm going to get through this. Then we went to record at HOJ. I'm like, oh, never mind. Like,
I do the same thing. I'm like, yes, two more books. And then we go see John and it's fucking 30 more books added to it. Oh man. But so I'll keep my books there. So I won't read them through the day, or typically even if I have downtime, I won't read them. It's typically when I'm in bed and Alicia's asleep or she's doing her own thing on the other side of the bed. So when we're in the living room, if she goes to give one of the kids a bath or something like that, I'll pop on Daredevil or Jessica Jones. Every night so far, I've watched one or two episodes of Daredevil to try and catch up.
Nice.
So that's, you know, my books are always going to be there. And they take me, you know, 10 or 15 minutes to read. So that's not a lot of time. But to sit down and dedicate an hour worth of time, I have to, you know, do it. I have to just say, fuck it. Tonight I'm going to watch two episodes of Daredevil. Right. And that's it. You know what I mean? So it's hard, but I try to find the time to make sure I'm keeping up on that stuff.
So it's funny, like you said, a single issue usually takes me like 10, 15 minutes to read. But I do read a lot of Golden Age books and like the Haunted Horror reprints and stuff. And those, the way comic books used to be written, were like way, way more word dense. Like it is like – it is ridiculous like how much like exposition in boxes there are. There will literally be a panel, you know, like a 2-inch by 3-inch square panel that will have – the upper left-hand corner will have a text box full of words. Then the two characters will be talking with word bubbles also full of words. And then the lower right-hand corner will also have a text box full of words. So like I find myself like I'll catch like – like I'm catching up on Haunted Horror right now. So I hit like all these Golden Age books, and those don't take me 10 or 15 minutes to read. Those take me like 30, 40 minutes to read. I'm just like, I find myself like, oh man, I got to pull some modern books out next time. Like, you know, cause like something like a Black Knight or like Weird World, which I'm reading like from Marvel right now.
Right.
They take like 5-10 minutes to read. Cause it's mostly like, it's two pages of action. Or like the latest East of West was like a silent book, except for the last page. So it took me not that much time to quote unquote read, because I was just looking at the pretty pictures, you know.
I wonder what he'd say here.
No, it's just an epic fight scene. Like it's just this epic like samurai sword versus ninja guys fight scene with it's like a naked lady fighting ninjas for like the whole comic book. It's amazing.
Okay.
Definitely one of the cooler episodes of East of West, or issues of East of West.
So speaking of Daredevil, we spoke about this upstairs, and I just kind of wanted to mention it.
On the shelf or the news?
No. This is the show itself.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. What the fuck? No, I don't know.
I'm
whatever. I don't have any idea how these segments work anymore. But
we have segments.
But we were talking about this a little bit upstairs in the. So I've been catching up on Daredevil. And I got to the part it was a night or two ago, where he you know, little Fisk, when he's like 10 or 11 or 12 or something like that. Little Wilson Fisk, he has to kill his dad. You know, he's saving his mom. He's a little bit more aggressive than he probably should be, but he has to kill his dad. So his dad is fucking just wailing on his mom with a belt. And he gets kind of fucking crazy, and he tells his dad to stop, and he holds a hammer in his hand. And the dad's like, what are you going to do? And he's like, I thought so. And he turns around, and I'm like, oh shit, this is going to be bad. And he swings the fucking hammer, and as soon as the hammer hits the fucking head, I'm taking out, because it sounds like the hammer's hitting a metal wall. You hear ting, and I literally was like, what the fuck was that? Like, it took me totally out of a scene that was supposed to be like,
it's like
really
super
serious.
It's super serious and super intense. Like to the point when I saw this scene, I didn't notice this at all. Like, I didn't notice that. Like, he just was wailing on his dad, and I'm like, holy fuck, that's fucked up. I love that you heard this noise, and you're just like, I'm out. Like, I don't know why his dad's... Why does his...
He's got
like,
a metal plate in his head.
Has a metal plate in his head. You don't know about his dad.
But it was funny because he
hits
him.
His dad's seen some shit, man. Nom wasn't easy.
He hits him, and the dad has this moment of like, oh, fuck. You know what I mean? And he touches his head, and then he falls. And I could have been brought back in. I could have been like, oh, shit, that was pretty crazy, you know, mind the ting. But then he goes crazy, and all I hear is ting, ting, ting. And I'm like, I can't take this scene serious. Like, it's just, it fucking made me laugh. And then what brought me back was the mom. When, you know, after everything's done, the mom turns to him and says, get the saw. And they fucking start chopping him up, and you know what I mean? That brought me back in. It was just that fucking moment where he's getting killed, and I could not stop hearing the ding, 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 ding. I don't know why. It was just so weird for me.
It's funny, like, we watch movies, and obviously almost all of them are fake.
Right.
Like, almost everything that we watch, except for, like, documentaries, is not real shit. So there's this moment where you have to suspend – it's called the suspension of disbelief.
Right.
And you, like, you watch it accepting that this is the universe that it exists in, and that's what's going to happen. But these are created. They're pieces of art, and they're created by, like, super flawed people.
Right.
And, you know, just like you and me, like, if I was an actor, I probably wouldn't be very good at it unless I could play Gabe Giannis asshole, you know? Or what would probably be, like, in the credits as asshole number three, like, you know? So, you and John, of course, being one and two. But you know, you're watching a movie and, like, the weirdest things, like, remind you sometimes that what I'm watching is not real.
Right.
Like, I know there's a scene in, like, I want to say it's like Game of Thrones. It's something with a dragon in it. I'm pretty sure it was Game of Thrones, where, like, it's this huge reveal and the dragon, like, comes out, and the dragon was so clearly made on a computer, and the person's interaction with it was, like, just enough off that it didn't, like, she was supposed to be, like, it was Game of Thrones. She was supposed to be kind of, like, looking directly into the eyes of the dragon, but her eyes are, like, looking just to the left of, like, the dragon's nose. And I remember watching it going, she's not looking at a dragon. Like, she's looking at a green screen right now and has no idea where that dragon's going to be. And I'm just going to pretend like I didn't see that and keep enjoying the show. But, like, there's these moments every once in a while I'll be watching a TV show and, like, just the way somebody delivers a line or says something, I'll be like, oh, they're acting. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's what they do. Like, these people are real.
This isn't
like,
real?
This isn't real? I don't know. It's just funny how that happens.
It was so funny in such a tense, serious moment that I just couldn't help but giggle to myself. It was just so funny to me.
I love it. I love it when, like, something makes you, like, something weird makes you laugh at what's supposed to be super serious.
Right.
Like, there's, you know, when certain, you know, people pass away or, like, certain things happen, like, that's my sense of humor, is to joke about, you know, death and bad things and, like, you know, dead babies and stuff like that, because those things are horrible.
Right.
And of course I don't want anybody's baby to not live. But if I joke about it, then I don't have to take it seriously.
Right.
If I joke about Wilson Fisk's dad's head having a metal plate in it, then I don't have to take it seriously. You know, so I have that kind of gallows sense of humor. So when things make me laugh that aren't supposed to make me laugh, that's my favorite. Like, that's the best part. Like, I love laughing at that stuff. That's why I like At Midnight so much, because there's so many AIDS jokes.
But goddamn, is Vincent D'Onofrio a fucking amazing actor.
He nails everything he's
Jesus.
In. Even in Men in Black, when he plays the
Edgar?
Edgar? Yeah.
The Edgar suit.
I hated him because, like, the way he delivered the lines, he's, like, so skeezy and, like, gross sounding. Yeah. Like, I need sugar in water. Like, it just, like, he made me feel gross for him.
Right.
Like, that movie was great, but, like, the level of acting that he threw into that is way past what that movie needed, you know?
He's just good.
He's an
amazing actor. I mean, it's just the more and more – and I love that Marvel gives so much energy and time to their villains as much as their heroes.
Well, they know that that's the key to what makes a protagonist – interesting is their antagonist.
Right.
Like, a key to what makes a hero interesting is their villains. Like, I think that's part of why Superman falls so flat, is it's very difficult to throw a villain against somebody that's indestructible,
right,
that's, you know, impossible to defeat. Like, the reason Lex Luthor gets so much traction as a villain is because he doesn't defeat Superman with his physical prowess. Right. He defeats him with his mind. Like, he gets one over on, right, Superman, and that's what makes him
and
cool.
And somehow he always escapes without ever being killed or anything.
Exactly.
You know, he's able to withstand whatever Batman throws at him.
Whatever
Superman throws at him, while at the same time trying to hatch his next scheme.
Exactly. But on the flip side of that coin, what makes Batman great is all the villains.
Right.
And because Batman's such, like, an emotionally and physically vulnerable person, like, somebody like the Riddler can fuck with his mind. Somebody like the Joker can fuck with him physically.
Right.
Somebody like Scarecrow can do both. You know, somebody like Clayface, somebody like Man-Bat. Like, that's what makes Batman great, is all these different things that he has to overcome in himself,
right,
to defeat his foes. And I think as, like, comic book storytelling gets more and more sophisticated over time, because it is, like, you know, so many more people think of it as art or as literature,
right,
whereas before it was just, you know, we just throw this out there and people read it, you know, especially in the heyday, in the golden age. It,
right,
was literally, how much can we churn out to make money? Whereas now people take it a little more seriously,
oh, yeah,
on the writing side of it. You know, that's why I think Superman is kind of falling, like, from grace, for a lack of a better term, because there's not so much that you can do with a completely invulnerable character.
Right.
There's not so much that you can do with it like you can with a Batman or like another super flawed hero, the Punisher.
Right.
Like, there's so much about him that is, like, deplorable and hateable, but you sympathize with him because he's gone through so much trauma. Or somebody like Daredevil, who works within the system and outside,
right,
of the system. You know, there's
the cool thing about some of those people, like Batman, he has, I mean, some of the reasons that some of these bad guys can get to him is through the people that he loves, and Batman has a very strong love for Gotham itself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So he takes that personally, whereas Superman, you know, he's got a small little group of friends who are family or lovers or whatever.
One might even say the Superman family.
Yeah. But he doesn't have, like, at the beginning, you know, he doesn't have a planet. He doesn't have a people. You know what I mean? It's not...
He's an alien.
Right. Like, it's not like you can get to him by, you know, affecting somebody he really loves, because there was only a few of those people.
And don't get me wrong, there's tons of nuance to, like, the,
right,
Superman story. Like, you know, though I'm not a huge fan of Superman, I know that there's a lot of really cool stuff in there. Like, it's just not my thing. And,
right,
I think a part of why, in the overall perspective of, like, comic books and, like, popularity, that's why Batman is the number one selling comic book, you know, almost year after year,
right,
after year, where Superman isn't as much, is there's less ability to, like, explore, like, right, those things because of what you said. He's not human.
Like,
right, it's harder to relate to him because,
right,
he's literally not a human, you know?
Well, and the other thing, especially with Daredevil, that you have to do with Fisk, because, you know, no matter how many seasons of Daredevil there are, he's never going to die. You're not going to defeat Fisk, because you know he goes on to do other things already, because that's the storyline that you're,
right,
in. You know he goes on to be Spider-Man villain. You know he goes to be a big part of this universe, so you have to make him unique. You have to build that backstory to him and make him different, because it's part of what made Jessica Jones appealing is that I know more than likely David Tennant was going to die. You know what I mean? But I know Wilson Fisk is still alive, so how do you keep my attention on his bad guy-ness through however many seasons of Daredevil that you're going to do?
You make him significantly more nuanced.
Right.
Because you know also that Daredevil's not going to die,
right,
but that he's going to go on to, like, get his suit and be a,
right,
part of a team and go and do all these things. If you know he's not going to defeat Fisk outright, how do you make it so that he's still interesting?
Right.
You give him this, like, deep, layered, super fucked up story,
right,
you know, and it's well done. Like, I'm, like you said, focusing on the villains makes it really cool. Like, I feel like, you know, one of the things that Guardians of the Galaxy was really successful at was taking Ronan, who's, like, not really a well-known villain, right, and making him something really cool where he's like this, you know, alien supremacist basically. And that makes him like this super diehard villain that you really want to hate, on top of the fact that Chris Pratt's like Star-Lord is so likable that it hurts, you know. And it's just, it's, that's, I think that's what made that movie so great, is right, that the villains were villains and the good guys were like good guys, you know, even though, you know, Gamora and Drax are maybe like on that cusp of like, you know, maybe they're well, good.
Drax
maybe they're
just not. Doesn't understand.
Why would I draw a line across my throat yeah. with my finger?
Nothing would go over my head. I would catch it.
I feel like Dave Bautista didn't really have to do a whole hell of a lot of acting.
Even in Spectre. I just watched Spectre the other day. And,
I haven't seen it
and
yet.
His last line is ultra fucking cheesy horrible in the movie. But he does a really good job of, because he doesn't talk throughout the whole movie. Because that's the character that he plays.
Yeah,
even in
kind of like an odd
I think
job.
It, I was going to say, I think even in the old one, whoever he's supposed to represent, his character doesn't speak.
Yeah, odd job doesn't talk.
So, but his presence is enough. His presence, you know, the way he carries himself is enough for you to go, fuck, this guy will kill me.
That dude, it's like, have you seen the episode of The Simpsons where the Yakuza gangs are fighting each other?
I don't think so.
So Homer is standing on the porch and this Yakuza gangs are fighting each other in the yard. And there's one dude in a white suit that's just standing there with his hands in his pockets. And Marge goes, come on, homie, let's go inside. He's all, oh, come on, Marge, that guy's about to do something awesome. I just know it. And she's all, no, it's not safe. And she brings him inside. And then, like, three guys, like, fly through their window. And, like, another dude flies through the wall. And then, like, the dude in this white suit, like, flips through their house and, like, lands in front of them. And he's all, I am sorry about your house. Forgiveness, please. And then, like, does a backflip out the window again.
That's funny.
It's just like that.
Oh man. I still have a lot of news, but we should probably take a break.
Yeah, let's take a break. I don't really have much news left.
Oh,
I just have
God,
my
I have a lot of shit still.
Little on the shelf stuff.
Fucking Deadpool.
Hey, that was a good conversation.
All right, we're gonna take a break and we'll come back.
Hey, this is Cullen Bunn, the writer of Harrow County, and you're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box.
What, next you're going to tell me the devil put dinosaur bones in the earth?
And we're back.
And we're back. Did you record the devil put dinosaur
yes.
bones in the earth? All right, just making sure.
So I have some on the shelf, but I still have a lot of other news. So we'll
Here,
do
let's,
that really quick.
Let's do this real quick.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes. Let's get the downer.
No.
Let's get the downer news out of the way.
Should we do it now?
Or should we wait till the end?
I think we should wait till the end.
Yeah, let's wait till the
yeah,
end.
Yeah, let's wait till the
All
end.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know why that happened.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Have you seen any Flash promotional stuff yet?
No.
So, in one of the promotional teaser returns, you see Harrison Wells in his Reverse Flash outfit.
Yes. So I saw that picture.
Okay,
I saw a picture.
Okay.
And it was something that he posted to Instagram that said, I get paid to do this. And it was really cool. It was like him looking all serious in the Reverse Flash suit. And it just said, I get paid to do this. I'm like, that's the fucking coolest shit
Fuck
ever.
Fuck you.
I hate you and love you all at once.
So somebody, I don't know if it was the producer or who, but somebody just came out and said that Reverse Flash is not an Earth 2 Reverse Flash like they thought it was going to be. It's the Reverse Flash that we know, but from an earlier timeline.
Oh, okay.
So he is still bad guy Reverse Flash. It's going to be the same guy we knew from the first season. It's just going to be an earlier version of him. And it makes me laugh because it's so, like, nobody ever really dies in these TV shows.
Oh,
like,
what?
The timeline is so discombobulated that you never know who's coming and going. It's cool.
Is it not just a function of how much we love the Back to the Future movies, though? Like, just that. Or like Star Trek. Like, let's just
fuck with time. What happens when you fuck with time? Everything gets confusing and convoluted. Yeah. And who knows? And it's awesome. And no one cares. Because someone can die, but they're not great because of time travel. Like, you know, it's like the scene. This is a little bit of a spoiler alert, but like the scene in the crossover that they did before the mid-season finale.
Oh, so a month ago by the time this comes out.
Yeah, exactly. But like that explosion happens and you see all of Team Arrow and all of Team Flash get wiped out like Terminator 2 style.
Right.
And then he runs backwards in time.
Side note, I hated that fucking scene Terminator 2.
Dude, I cried myself to sleep that night after watching that. Like, much like my son, I was a very sensitive little boy.
Was? Dude, anyways.
Shut up! Like, he runs back in time and saves the day. And, it makes everything different, you know? So you get to see crazy shit happen. Like, oh, shit! Yeah. But then he fixes it, and it's okay, you know?
I love that. When he's going to time travel, he sees himself earlier in the episode, and you're going, oh, fuck, I wonder what he's going to change. Like, why is he going back in time? I love that he sees himself kind of running beside himself.
And he knows, hey, I saw myself ghosting again. And I think Vibe asks him, are you going to travel through time again? this is going to be cool. But what's weird is, there are some subtle ramifications to it, because in one timeline, Vibe dies.
Right.
And he remembers it.
Right.
You know, it makes me wonder, at what point, you know, they all die, effectively in a nuclear holocaust. Right.
Does that timeline still go forward?
Will some of them recognize it?
Right.
Is that the timeline that Legends of Tomorrow happens in, where, you know, Damian Dark and Vandal Savage have, taken over the world? You know, it's cool. I love what they do with the DC shows. Right. They're fun. They're exciting. They're entertaining. They make me read superhero comic books that I haven't read in a long time. I mean, what's funny is I like the Flash show marginally better than the Arrow show.
Right.
I really, really like both shows, but the Flash one is just a little more just balls to the wall, pure entertainment, you know, whereas Arrow is a little more serious and kind of soap opery sometimes, which sometimes I love it. Sometimes I'm just like, oh God, stop talking. Start punching shit.
I hope Arrow shoots you in the face.
But I have gone back and I have a ton of the Mike Grell Green Arrows, and I've gone back and reread all of them because they're super awesome. I was like, oh man, I hope they do this one. Or, oh, I hope they do this plot line. You know, it's cool to revisit stuff that I haven't really thought about too much in a really long time, because, you know, these TV shows make me feel like a little kid when I'm watching them. And that's the stuff I read when I was really, really little. You know, everybody that read comic books at that age, you know, your parents don't go out and buy you crazy shit. They're not going to buy you, you know, Image books. They're going to buy you fucking, you know, Green Arrow and Superman. Because
that's what they know.
Yeah, that's what they know too. So it's just fun.
It's cool. It's one of the things that I really like about the show is that, you know, while we know, you know, that Caitlin is in some point eventually becomes a bad,
Killer
a villain.
Frost, yeah.
The cool thing is, what I think they're doing, and they did it with Firestorm, is that Killer Frost is not going to be the Caitlin that we know. It's going to be a Caitlin, what I think. I don't, it's not being confirmed, but it's going to be a Caitlin from a different world. And that's cool, because I still get the Killer Frost villain that she's supposed to be. And you still get the Caitlin that you've kind of grown to love, and the Cisco you've grown to love. And wouldn't it be amazing if you could see Firestorm and Deathstorm in the same episode, going at it with each other?
Yeah.
That would be fucking cool.
And that'll happen. Or another spoiler alert, hi, Iris. Hi, Dad. I'm Wally West.
Oh, yeah, right.
You know, so you have Jay Garrick, Wally West, and Barry Allen. I can't wait to see the episode where they're boom, 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 1, 2, 3, run right by you.
And
then
Harrison Wells' daughter is a speedster, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's just they're developing it in such a way that it's like the comic books, where it's episodic, but it's slowly building more and more universe and story to tell. It's awesome. They're doing a really bang-up job with it.
They're banging
it. They are just, they're giving me everything I want all over my face, neck, and chest.
Speaking of that
face,
world.
Face, neck, and chest.
No. Speaking of that world, Legends of Tomorrow, in this season, you will, I don't know who this person is that much, but Jonah Hex is supposed to be
yes,
in this season.
Yes, I saw that.
So, and again, I don't know much about him. I know the name and I know a little bit about him. He's like a gunslinger.
Yeah,
kind
he's
of.
Like a gunslinger from like the Civil War. And if I remember right, he was like hung, but he didn't die. He's basically like every like spaghetti Western Clint Eastwood movie, right. But in like a comic book character. But he always like, he's always fighting like, you know, kind of mystical stuff. Like scary evil stuff, but like the cool thing about him is his face is all fucked up. If I remember correctly, he's dead, like,
okay.
Or he's like undead on some level. So it'll be cool. Jonah Hex will be really cool. I'm hoping, like, when I saw that news, I was like, man, I really hope that, like, because it's a time travel show, that they go to different parts and times of like the DCU,
right?
And I hope that there's like a fucking Wild West episode, because that would be awesome. I would love to watch. I'm not going to lie, I kind of hope that Legends of Tomorrow is like Superhero Quantum Leap. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Where they're just like jumping around in time, trying to like fix different things. And like, you know, they can have a Feudal Japan episode and like a Wild West episode and like a, you know, 20s, you know, Roaring 20s episode and a World War II episode, you know.
That'd be cool.
That would be super cool. I would totally watch that.
I'm excited.
Not like I'm not going to watch it already.
I'm excited for how the premise is going to go forward for this, for future seasons, right. Switching out casts and finding different heroes or villains to make up these teams. I think that's a really good idea to
I do
move
too.
Forward
It'll
with,
be cool.
So.
It's everything about what DC's doing and like in their TV universe is really cool. I really, you know, I'm still really bummed that they didn't do the whole TV to movie kind of cross population. Like, I feel like they're kind of doing themselves a disservice with, like, there's a lot of really good actors, a lot of really cool storylines that they could have all worked together that would have been really awesome.
But I mean,
Marvel's getting away from that now.
And at the same, well, with one property, like, that's it. As far as I know, it's just one property. The other thing that it does, in my mind, if I'm an actor in the show and my show is getting giant ratings, is go, how do I not deserve a spot in a big-time movie?
Like,
how do you not give Stephen Amell a Green Arrow movie? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Or a Green Arrow role in the Justice
Anything.
League movie.
Yeah. It's just this, The Flash, Barry Allen, Grant Gustin is fucking killing that role.
Yeah.
And somehow he doesn't get to be in a movie that just, as an actor, I would be like, what the fuck? Like, seriously?
Yeah.
Like, it seems like a little bit of a slap in the face to...
Because
I'm the one who's made this shit popular for you. Now you're just going to go out and give it to somebody else?
No matter who they cast as Green Arrow or Flash in Justice League movie, I'm going to be comparing them immediately.
Right, of course.
To Gustin and Amell. Like, there's no way for me to, like... look at that and not be like, that guy's not Stephen Amell.
Right.
That guy doesn't even have abs like Stephen Amell. That guy's not anywhere near as dreamy as Stephen Amell. You know, it's just...
You just do yourself a disservice. I mean...
I think they are. And who knows? Maybe by the time they actually get to that, they'll be like, oh yeah, we
we need you on board.
Maybe Suicide Squad takes a big enough dump that they're like, we're going to bring the TV guys over.
It's not going to take a dump.
I know. So everybody's going to love it except for me. It's okay.
Speaking of superheroes still, S.H.I.E.L.D. is getting its own spinoff about Mockingbird.
Oh, okay.
Which I don't know how to feel about it, because I'm not really invested in her a ton. You know what I mean? She's cool. I'd rather see something with... I'd rather see more of Phil Coulson, to be honest. I'd rather see more of the Inhumans than I would of the Mockingbird. I don't know. I just don't know how to feel about it. It's happening is at the same time as that... We spoke about it a while when the news first broke about it being a rumor about the insurance agency in the universe, where, you know, people have to make claims against superheroes and stuff like that.
Right.
They're both happening kind of at the same time, and they're both in-universe. They've come out and said the comedy will be an in-universe
thing. I love that idea.
So it's cool. And that seems interesting because it's different to me.
Yeah.
I don't know how to feel about the Mockingbird spinoff.
You know what
I just don't know yet.
You know what the insurance company spinoff reminds me of is Better Call Saul, which was like, was like a great show.
Right.
Like, it's a super funny show. It's super weird. Like, and you kind of get to see like the origin story of like this like kind of lovable but fucking horrible character from Breaking Bad. Like, I love that idea of like an insurance agency that like deals with like, yes, I understand that the Hulk jumped on your car. You know? Like,
he didn't have full coverage.
Is it an act of God if you can be like, that's the dude that did it?
But he's not a god. If Thor did it,
Thor does it.
I can't get fucking Thor's hammer off my car.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, man. Dawn of the Justice League. Have you heard about this little episode miniseries thing?
No, I have not.
So, Dawn of the Justice League is supposed to air 30-minute episodes after Legends of Tomorrow. It's hosted by Kevin Smith.
I'm in.
And I have... I don't have any idea how many episodes it's going to be so far. I know of only two.
Okay.
The first episode is going to deal with the rest of the season of Legends of Tomorrow. So it gives you a little bit of backstage and kind of, you know, a little sneak peek at what's to come.
So this is going
to
be like a nonfiction show.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Cool.
And the next episode after that will feature behind the scenes and sneak peeks of Suicide Squad, Batman versus Superman, and Wonder Woman. It'll give you your supposedly it's supposed to give you your first look at the solo Wonder Woman movie,
which I'm super excited about.
She looks really badass in Batman versus Superman.
I do like that little, you know, is she with you? No, I thought she was.
Yeah, and they're like, oh.
For the record, Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman does what the fuck she wants to do.
But it's just an interesting, I like the idea. First off, it, like you said, it's being hosted by Kevin Smith, so automatically I'm like, I want to watch it.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to see
that guy can literally talk about farts and dicks, and I want to listen to it. That's what I'm saying. Like, he literally talks about farts and dicks, and I fucking listen to that podcast and love it. Like, it doesn't matter.
But it's, again, and I think
if you're listening right now, Kevin Smith, like I asked you to
listen to the show,
please, for the love of God, be on our show. Like, I should have
he didn't
you.
Ask you that. But it's cool because he's becoming so relevant again, and he's giving you behind the scenes of stuff that we already want to see and we want to see more of. You know what I mean? I was already invested in Star Wars, but hearing him speak about how he's walked on the Millennium Falcon
and
he cried,
how excited he was,
it just fueled my energy for that movie more. And I think he's a great person. I think he's a great spokesman for that genre, for these movies.
It's for our culture. Like, right. That's the thing is, like, I feel like you may or may not feel this quite as much as I do. I grew up, my mom was white, my dad was Mexican. So I didn't really fit in with either side. Like, I don't know Spanish. I don't look super Mexican. Well, interesting story. When my parents got divorced, my mom told my dad not to teach me Spanish because it would remind her too much of my dad, and that pissed her off. It's like really convoluted how I ended up not learning Spanish. But because I didn't, like, my white grandparents thought of me as their Mexican grandkid, and my Mexican grandparents thought of me as their white grandkid, you know, and I was always like not really, I have no actual cultural heritage that I like super associate with very well, you know? So growing up, my cultural heritage was that I was a nerd. Like, that was my thing.
Right.
Both families thought I was a fucking weirdo because I was always writing shit and reading comic books and reading, you know, 800-page, like, Stephen King novels.
Right.
Or, like, even worse, like, the Sword of Shannara series, which
never even heard of it.
MTV made a TV show out of, which I've heard is pretty good, and I need to watch it, and I'll get back to you on that. But, you know, like, I mean, my cultural heritage has less to do with like my actual cultural heritage and way more to do with my pop culture.
Right.
Like it has way more to do with the kind of music I listen to, the kind of movies I watch, the kind of books I read, the kind of comic books I read.
Right.
And Kevin Smith, I think, came up in a generation where it was less important to be Irish or Mexican or, you know, Italian or whatever. And more important to be like, I read comic books or I love football,
right,
or I love, you know, I'm a huge Rolling Stones fan. Like it stopped. People don't really associate with race as much,
right,
in our generation. I think our kids do more than we do. Like, but I think more people,
it has more to do with the political aspect. Yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, our generation is very much like, I listen to punk or I listen to rap or I listen to metal or I listen to country. You know, there were the segments of like your social structure in high school and middle school had way less to do with like who you were physically and way more to do with what you consumed in the pop culture, right, world.
Cause I think you more so than me, because you're older than me, you grew up in an era where I grew up with Eminem, you know, people were breaking down those barriers where, you know, a white guy could rap just as well as any other, you know, what we would consider normal would be a black person rapping, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like he could spit out rhymes just as well as anybody else. You know what I mean? You had Run DMC and Aerosmith. What?
No, that was Public Enemy and Anthrax.
Yeah, I was like, what? Sorry. You had Run DMC and Aerosmith do something together that, who cares what color they were? They were bringing something that was just fucking awesome to your ears that you could consume.
Yeah, thanks guys for making Limp Bizkit, you fucking assholes.
But it had less and less to do with, I mean, that's what
it had, less and less to do with race, right, and everything to do
with the art.
With the pop culture, right, side of it. You know, and Kevin Smith is a great spokesperson for what I consider my culture, the nerd culture.
Right.
He is super successful. He loves sports. He loves hockey.
Right.
He can be invested in like all the normal things that like a normal everyday American is into. He likes sports. He likes TV. He likes whatever. He likes all the same things that the dude sitting in an office likes. But he's also incredibly well educated on comic books and fucking weird bullshit stuff that is part of what I consider my culture. Like, he knows a lot about comic books and like movies and TV and all this pop culture shit that is what I immerse myself in, because I didn't have anywhere that I fit in.
Right.
Like, the only place I fit in was by myself fucking reading Swamp Thing and Sergeant Rock, you know? And that's, I think that's what's cool, is he's likable,
right,
and enjoyable and really relatable. And on top of it, he like represents who I am a lot better than most people, right, out there do. Right. So,
and he really is the everyday man. He took out a loan to do something he really wanted to love and or really loved doing. And there was a point when he was screening his first movie that he said, fuck, I'm going to go broke because nobody's laughing at this fucking movie. It's going to be horrible. You know what I mean? And he did the American dream, and, you know, quotes, because he went out and did what he did and he put himself in debt and it ended up being a really big success.
And then I watched it and I was like, this dude made a movie about my asshole friends.
He's just perfect. He's like I said, there was a time where he himself
suck his dick.
There was a time where he became irrelevant, but it was because of him. He lost his passion for what he wanted to do.
And then Tusk.
Which was amazing. But that was more of a self-imposed, I'm just going to step away from everything because...
You know what? What I think is really interesting is, like, I've been thinking about, you know, kind of like his body of work. And there's basically two kinds of movies that Kevin Smith has made. Either movies about me and my friends or fucking super weird movies.
Right.
Dogma is great and it's funny, but holy shit, that movie's weird. Like, what are you going to do? Rape me? And like, he pulls down his pants. He's all, I'm ill-equipped for that. I have the genitalia of a Ken doll. You know, I mean, it's just like, and the Golgothan shit demon. Like, I mean, how did we not see Tusk coming? That's right. All I'm saying. Like,
well, he's gone on record and his whole hiatus and finding himself again was because when he was writing Clerks and when he was writing Chasing Amy and these other movies, they came from his life. Like, they came from his personal love interests and what he was feeling at the time. And he ran out of those things to do. And Tusk came from, nobody's going to make this movie if I don't make this movie. You know, nobody could, who else would make a movie about another guy turning another guy into a fucking walrus? You know, that was a movie he wanted to see, but nobody would make it except for him. Yeah. So he's gone on record as saying, this is the time where I'm going to make stuff. Maybe it's not going to be popular or mainstream, but it's going to be crazy shit coming from my imagination, you know? And that's different because it doesn't necessarily come from his own life, which is how he wrote to begin with.
Right. And I love that because, I mean, I love shit like that. I love fucking weirdo. Like, if I could express to you the number of Japanese action and horror movies that I've seen that have, like, unexplainable things, like a ninja fighting a lady who has, like, vagina bubbles, like,
okay,
lethal vagina bubbles, like, or a lady that squirts acid milk out of her nipples. Like, I mean, there's just like, I've put some weird shit into my brain. So when it
sounds like it,
when it's weird shit made by Kevin Smith, it's like, yeah, this is entertaining. I want to see that.
I just love yet listening another to him
episode
talk
of this stupid ass show where we're just like, Kevin Smith. Oh God. Yeah.
It's because I don't know what it is. I literally could listen to him talk for 10 hours. I don't know what it is.
Listen to him talk for 10 hours.
Oh, man. But that's cool. I'm excited for the show, even though I don't really know much about it. I'm going to burn through three things really quick.
Okay.
Jumanji, getting a reboot, coming out on Christmas this year.
Unnecessary.
I don't know anything else about it, but it was a cool movie. Yeah, we'll see.
Dude, why not just put
reservedly excited.
Look, Robin Williams is great in it. The movie still looks halfway decent.
Oh, yeah,
like,
it does.
I mean, for being kind of like on the early side of like CGI and stuff, like the movie's still completely believable. Like, just put Jumanji in the theater again. Who cares? Give it like
I bet kids would watch it.
Give it an HD like facelift.
Right.
And throw it on a DLP screen in a movie theater. I guarantee. When I was a little kid, like, this is going to date me a little bit. When I was a little kid, I remember going to see Dumbo in the movie theaters. Not because Dumbo had been released, but because Disney, there was no VHS market.
Right.
There was no, like, you know, there was no, for our even younger viewers, there was no DVDs. Because that was like, we're talking like when the only way to watch a movie was on film.
Right.
Okay. So the way Disney kept people watching their animated films was that every, like, year they would release a new one and re-release an old one, and you would go to the movie theater, watch Bambi or Dumbo or Cinderella, right, or whatever in the movie theater. Do that, say, for Christmas this year, exclusive on Christmas, you know, movie theaters around the country, we're gonna replay Jumanji as a tribute to what a great movie it is and Robin Williams. Let's all have fun on Christmas and right, go watch Jumanji with our kids. Like, just fucking do that. You make a killing off of that shit. Because every parent who watched it when they were a kid would pack their kids up, oh, yeah, and take them to see it. I know I would in a heartbeat. Remaking Jumanji, completely fucking unnecessary.
Like, yeah, I don't know anything about it. They just found a producer, and I know it had a date. And that's why, yeah, I put it down.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, there's something to be said about if you're remaking it, it's clearly a money grab. If you want to really respect the heritage of that movie, an actor that was famous and amazing, who's now passed on, like, if you want to be respectful to that, make it an event instead of a money grab. Like, it would be, I think, even more successful that way.
It would be cool.
Yeah.
Alien Covenant, aiming for a hard R rating.
Don't tell Matt.
Don't tell Matt. So it sounds like it's going back to you know, it sounds like it's going back to its roots, yeah, which is cool.
I'm excited to see it.
Me
like,
too.
I mean, fuck you, Matt. I like the Alien franchise. Like, I mean, it's not like we haven't talked about this like ad nauseum on the show.
Right.
So.
I just read the article and thought I'd say something. 67 superheroes are reported to be in Infinity Wars.
Yeah, I saw that. 60
fucking 7 superheroes.
Well, I mean, you got four, like, well, you probably have closer to 6 hours. I'm guessing.
Three movies.
Oh, it's three movies.
Is it three?
No, it's only two movies.
Two movies.
But I'm guessing that all of the movies clock in at about 2.5 hours.
Probably.
So you're probably closer to 5 or 6 hours of screen time. Like, that's doable. Like, if you think of the scene in Age of Ultron where the Avengers are fighting Ultron and like Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch and everybody's there, there's like 9 people on screen. Like right there,
so they need 58 more people.
That's a sixth of the people like that you need right there. You know, I mean, it's insanity, but that's
what I'm more excited to see who those 67 people could be.
I'm stoked. I'm stoked to see.
I'm excited
where
for sure.
It goes. Like,
I just was like, damn near 100 superheroes in one app and one in two movies. Like, it's gonna be cool.
It's gonna be really cool.
I wonder if superheroes was used vaguely to count both the actual heroes and the villains, because it'd be cool to see, you know, villains as much as the superheroes.
You see a lot of villains fighting on the good side too, because Thanos isn't like trying to like, you know,
he doesn't have a team.
He's not conquering. He's not like conquering the earth for him and his buddies.
Right.
He's like conquering the earth for like him. You know, and by earth I mean universe. So. I hope there's an awesome, like, Howard the Duck in it. I mean, they've already hinted at it. Like, I hope Howard the Duck has, like,
he's
actual
He's already been
time.
In this in the movies.
That movie's terrible.
No, he was in Guardians of the Galaxy.
I'm hoping he has, like, an active role. Like, I love Howard the Duck's comic book. Like, the Chip Zdarsky Howard the Duck needs to be in those movies. Like, how he... What is the guy that played Spider-Man in like the latest one? Andrew Garfield.
Yes, yeah.
So in the Howard the Duck comic book, he has Spider-Man saved in his phone as Spider-Man Drew Garfield.
Man, that's funny.
See, that's funny. Like, I want that to happen.
Chip Zdarsky is just funny.
Chip Zdarsky's hilarious. That guy's so funny.
I'm done with news, and I have 4 comic books that I read.
All right, so I have a few on the shelf too.
No.
First and foremost, this week, like I was talking about, I've been reading a lot of Golden Age reprints. I've been catching up on Haunted Horror. Like, I typically let 4 to 5 issues of Haunted Horror build up in my box before I sit down and read them all because of the time constraint. Like,
right.
It takes like a half an hour, 40 minutes to read it. And instead of spreading it out, I try to like find a week where I don't have a lot going on and just plow through them.
Right.
Those books are awesome. Like, if you want a peek at like what comic books were before the Comics Code and you want a little piece of like that comic book history, Haunted Horror is like it. Like, it's the best. It's super, some of them are super cheesy. They're super funny. Like, they're great. I was explaining to Mel like the plots of some of them and she's like, oh, those sound awesome. They sound like really shitty episodes of Tales of the Crypt. I'm like, that is exactly what they are. Like, Tales from the Crypt was one of these books, like from the golden age of comics, you know. I went so far as to, I have issues 2 through 20, and I've been using, I want to say Eric Ties. I always get their first names confused because of Facebook. It's super frustrating. Eric made something on the internet. It's in beta, so I don't want to like say its name and stuff like that. But it's like a search engine that allows you to search for a comic book title, and it goes and it tells you what it's sold for recently on eBay.
Right.
And so using that, I was actually able to obtain a copy of Haunted Horror 1 for like an actually reasonable price. Like, with shipping, I paid $33 for it, which is about $20 less than all of the buy it nows for it. So I now have a full run of Haunted Horror, which is really, really cool to me. Like, it's probably one of my favorite like ongoing titles. Like, someday I keep telling Juan to tell or contact at IDW to figure out a way to get us to talk to Craig Yeo, who is the actual publisher. Like, Haunted Horror comes out on IDW, but it's on Yeo Books, which is like a
an imprint.
Right.
So
I may have to just find his. I may just have to go out because the guy who is our contact over there, he's like, yeah, I mean, I'll do my best, but he doesn't. They don't.
He doesn't like.
So
work
he works
there, work
at
there.
The office, but I don't think Craig Yeo really ever goes to the office.
Yeah, like I said, it's like an imprint.
Right.
Like, I think IDW. It's like I think he makes the book, produces it, creates it, and sends it right. to IDW, and they take care of all the physical logistics right. of like getting it printed and getting it into the stores. And stuff.
So he was like, yeah, I'll try. And he's been really cool so far. So I may just have to go find him out and seek him out and see what we can do. Yeah, who knows?
And I've been getting some pre-code books that I'm going to try to make some scans for. Because the way they make haunted horror is people with pre-code books take the stories that they like, scan them, and send them to him. And then he reprints them because they're way out of copyright.
Right.
Like they're so old, you know, so I'm going to take a few of my favorites and send them his way. Cause there's some doozies in there, man. Like there was a lot more face melting and like head decapitations and like all sorts of crazy shit. Talking about the difference between PG-13 and rated R. Like, golden age horror books, like, are rough stuff sometimes in like this really weird funny way that is cool. But I love haunted horror, so I've been catching up on that this week.
The only thing that I have even close to a full run of right now is the Kevin Smith era Green Arrow, that whole volume, and that's only in the paperback. It's only in the trades.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to collect both. I'm still trying to collect the single issues, but I wanted to collect all the trades as well.
So you can read it.
Yeah. Right. And the one I'm missing, I think it's City Walls, is literally like $100 or more, no matter where I look.
Because it's out of print.
And I'm like, mother of God, like this is the last one and the only one. I think all the other ones were like $20, $30. And that's, you know, some of them are hardbacks. They're not paperbacks. So, you know, they were a little bit more expensive. But I was like, holy shit, $100? I don't know that I'm going to ever get this on.
So
not because I can't afford it. I'm just cheap and I don't want to spend that much money on it.
So it's like, obviously the full run that I have is my Conan the Barbarian.
Right.
I'm super, super proud of that. Like big feather in my cap. I fucking love that. But I'm collecting Chronicles of Conan, which is the Dark Horse reprints of the Marvel run. And I ran into the same thing. Volumes 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, readily available for, like, cover price.
Right.
Volumes 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 are all out of print. So they're, like, 60, 50, 40, 30, or something ridiculous like that. I mean, volume 6, I have not seen for less than $60. Like, for fucking trade? Like, I want to, like, you know, I'm not saying like personal friends, but I right. have contacts with Dark Horse. And every once in a while, I think to myself, if I email them, will they listen to me? Like, could you please reprint volume 6 of Chronicles of Conan just so I don't have to pay $60 for that book? Like, can't be that hard.
Just send me one. Go to the factory, make one really quick.
And just send me to one. Me. It's no big deal. I'll be your friend forever. I'll owe you a solid, you know?
I'll owe you a sad handy.
Sad handy. Maybe even a happy
handy. Oh, man. Two of them I can combine, Justice League and Justice League of America. They've both dealt more with the main core of the Justice League and not the America side. Even the America title still deals with more the main Justice League. And they've been...
This is not me being a smartass. Like, I genuinely, since I don't really read the book, I read Justice League United, so I know who's in that. And they kind of, like, hint at who's...
Right.
You know, you see scenes where John Jones is, like, interacting with, like, Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman, and they're... quote unquote, the Justice League.
The Trinity.
You know, they're kind of the thing. But who all is in the Justice League right now?
So Green Arrow, Flash, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. I think that might. I mean, Cyborg has his little run ins here and there, but I think those five are the,
kind of
main
the main
guys.
That's cool.
And so those two titles right now are running a Darkseid title And the Justice League of America, I think, is the one that's dealing with the god of Rao, who is a Kryptonian. And they've been really, really good. Like, I don't know why or how or what, but it's both of those storylines have been, like, I need to read that. Like, it's been really good so
was
far.
It was Dom, right, that picked the Darkseid book as his favorite for this year.
And the Darkseid part has just ended. The consequences of that are still going on. Oh, so Dom was
cheating. No, it's just kidding. Because it ended this year. It's not last year's comic book.
But it started last year. But that Darkseid part just ended, but the consequence of what was going on is still going on in these future books. And it's just really good. It's not like when I started reading them, they were good and, you know, whatever. But I like the big arcing, you know, storylines of where we're going. I like that rather than single little things here and there.
Here's what's interesting. Like, you like the big overarching story superhero team books. I really am a huge fan of stuff like Brave and the Bold, where, you know, back in like the 70s and 80s and whatever, it was one issue split between two different stories a lot of the time, with like one character being in one story and one character being in another story. And there was no overarching story. Right. It's just like a little glimpse at Batman and then a little glimpse at Aquaman. Woohoo! Like, I like that more when it comes to superheroes. Like,
So ever since I started reading, it's been really one big arc after another.
Nice.
So it's always been, or lately, a lot of it has been like the whole league, and you get to see everybody and a ton of different villains, and it's been really cool. I'm a big fan of that. I don't read like solo Batman issues or solo Superman issues.
See, and I love Batman.
And it's not because I do or I don't. I've never been like, I need to pick that up. You know what I mean? I've just been so entrenched in the Justice League main titles that I've just been stuck there. And I really like them. I think they're doing really well.
See, for me, I'm just so much more interested in just Batman. Personally, that's the only like superhero title I really collect.
Right.
Is just Batman, you know, because I want to know what Batman's doing because I fucking love Batman. So, I don't know.
He's taking out the Joker.
What?
He killed him.
No way. Several times.
The Walking Dead has been really good. I've read up to 148.
That's where I'm at.
149
as well.
Is the current one. Or no, I'm sorry. I've read up to 149. 150 is the current one.
So I have not read 149. I'm super excited about 150. I think that came out this week.
I think so. And I didn't read the article, but I always like to read the titles. And supposedly in 150, something big happens to Carl. He loses something, is what
his other eye.
Yeah. So I'm excited to get there, which I won't for another 2 weeks because that's in my pool from John. Yeah. So,
there's a part of me that thought about driving to Parker just so I could pick up my pool, just so I could read the new issue of The Walking Dead and Swamp Thing. Like, because I haven't had a chance to read Swamp Thing yet either, and I'm super, super stoked about that.
But it's been good. There was more levity in 149 than in 148, and I wonder if he did that because 150 is probably a more serious,
yeah.
Right. So it's just the interactions with Rick and Negan are fucking hilarious. Like,
dude, the cover has Negan standing behind Rick and like Negan looks like a sexual predator. Like it is like the cover's great. Like it's a really cool cover, but I can't get over that. Like in my brain, every time I see it, I kind of chuckle because it looks like he's like about to put his dick in Rick's mouth. Like it's really, really funny to me.
It's awesome.
Always blowjobs on this show.
It's awesome because even when Negan isn't in control, he's in control. Yeah. You know, Rick comes to him and he talks to him, I think, every single day. And Negan's like, you're going to listen to me. Sit your ass down and I'm going to tell you something. And Rick does it. I don't think because Rick is necessarily like scared of him or anything. Well,
it's just like when Negan has the opportunity to escape and he doesn't.
Right.
And he says, you will eventually trust me. Like, you will trust me.
Right.
You know, he's one of those guys that tells you what you're going to do, and you may deny it right then, but like 2 weeks later, you're like, yeah, I trust you.
Can I spoil one of the funnies?
Yeah, go for it.
So So Rick is... Spoilers. Yeah. So Rick goes down to the basement because he's looking for advice. And he goes... Rick comes down and he goes something to the effect of, we need to talk. And Negan's like, awesome. Who do I got to kill? What are we doing? Like, you know, you're finally letting me out. And Rick's like, what are you talking about? You're never getting out of here. And Negan's like, oh... Like, he really, like, he was so deflated. He's like, oh, man. Like, it was just so funny. It made me laugh.
That's awesome.
Shit. but it's good. I'm excited to read 150 when I get it. I'm like Negan, I really want Rick to use Negan against the Whispers. I think it just seems perfect.
I think a lot of people that are reading the comic book see the logic in using Negan as like a tool,
right,
against like Negan is the like unmovable object against like the unstoppable force. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think the people that read the comic book are seeing where that's going, and that like really the only person that can solve this problem is fucking crazy ass Negan, because he's gonna like bash somebody's head right. shut, you know, and like solve the problem. Whereas Rick has to like worry about the politics of the situation. Negan is the hammer that you use to fix the job, you know? So that, I mean, it feels like that's where they're going with it. And I want that to happen. Right. Whereas before, I hated Negan so much. But at this point, I'm just like, I don't know. Like, he might be what you
might
need to use.
Might have to uncage him. Like, the political stuff you've seen doesn't work. I think in 148 is you where they're that. In the hall. And Rick's trying to talk to people. And then a fucking brawl breaks out.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, at this point, it's not working.
Well, I think it's because people have become, like, almost feral at that point. Like, they've gone through so much that they realize that talking doesn't solve problems in their world right. anymore. Like, the only thing that solves problems is action, whether that be to double down on defending yourself or double down on attacking your opponents. Like, it takes action to survive. So when they talk and talk and talk, it frustrates everybody, you know, and everybody's just like, we have to fix this, because if we don't fix it, the stakes are not, you know, I won't get reelected.
Right.
The stakes are, I will die. And right. the reason I know I will die is because, spoiler alert, there's like a row of severed heads on pikes that delineate the Whisperer's territory, you know? All right. So My on the Shelf is next on the shelf. Not a comic book at all. I deserve that. I deserve that. It's the Netflix documentary series Making a Murderer.
I've only heard some things. I haven't really paid attention to it.
So here's the thing.
I don't get into the politics of who gets to be released from jail and speculating, and I just don't.
So when you watch this movie, like, it's not even like a movie. It's like a 10-hour like documentary series.
Right.
For starters, it's like the most compelling episode of like Dateline NBC of all time. Okay. Like, episode one is literally just about this guy, Stephen Avery, who was convicted of murder or convicted of rape, sent to prison, went to prison for 18 years. Then DNA evidence basically proved that he couldn't have done it, and was exonerated and released from prison after spending 18 years in prison.
Right.
Okay. And then this lady basically disappeared after seeing him. And he was then, like, less than 3 years later, like 2 years later, put back on trial for murder. Okay. And there's a gajillion levels of evidence that point to, not only did he not commit the murder, but he also was framed for the murder. And when you're watching it, it's almost impossible to not be at once, like, appalled at, like, what has happened to this person, but to also be a little terrified that if you get on the wrong side of the right people, that could totally happen to you. Because
if they don't kill you.
Because I'm not rich. And I can't afford a good lawyer.
Right.
And I don't have, like, a legal team to back me up. This guy had two good lawyers, and they presented evidence that if I was in the jury box would have been like, I don't know. Like, that's sketchy as fuck.
Right.
And he still got convicted. You know, and there's been a juror anonymously came out and said, we felt compelled to give him a guilty charge because watching this evidence – you know, they are all from the same county as these police. It's a jury of his peers.
Right.
So if they come back and give him like a not guilty or a mistrial, you know, when next time they get pulled over by that cop who's still in active detail in a small town, how do they know that there's not going to be repercussions for them, you know, not convicting this guy? Like, you know, I mean, there's so many like crazy, just weird layers, and like obviously all of it's speculation.
Right.
The criminal justice system works a very specific way where, you know, we in general, we have to trust it. And if we don't trust it, then law and order falls apart, which is a dangerous, dangerous place to be at.
And a good show.
Yeah. Dun, dun. But there are holes in the system.
Of course.
And there are
– nothing's perfect.
There are glaring holes when it comes to people who are not rich or who are not educated or who, you know, live in certain parts of the country or are specific ethnicities, you know. And it's – watching it is like this super compelling, really well-made documentary that is – I mean, I hate to say it, fucking unbelievably entertaining, because you're like on the edge of your seat. What's next? What could they possibly do next to this fucking guy?
Here's the issue I have with that is, you know, if you're that guy and, you know, let's say they're framing you. Let's just say that, and you're fighting for your life. More so, do you blame these other people who are on the jury who, for fear, you know, whether it's rational or irrational, pretty much think you're innocent if that's what they're saying, and they sent your ass to jail anyways.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah, the system's not perfect, but those people who are in that jury box are supposed to be fucking – they're not supposed to let those things get to them. You know what I mean? That person who came out anonymously, they didn't put their name out because they're fucking pussies. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Fuck that. You should take the brunt of that blame as well. If you're coming out and saying you were scared, you need to come out and be an adult and say, here's who I am. I was scared.
I'm scared to death of saying
this. It is what it is, but I need to say it. You know what I mean? Not lurk in the shadows and be like, I send him to jail. Who cares? You know, I'm just saving myself, because that's bullshit.
Like, I think part of it is it's a small community.
Right.
And I think that's a big part of it is, I mean, you grew up in Alt, which for those of you who are not from Colorado and are listening to this show, is a tiny, tiny town. I'm sure you know most of the people in the town. So at that point, like, you know, there's this weird small town mentality. Greeley kind of used to have it, but it's gotten a lot bigger, so it's not as prominent. But there's like a sense of like, we band together and we hold the community together. And sometimes there's secrets that you just, you know, everybody knows, but nobody says anything about it. And I think that's a big part of what has happened here. It's just that the headline is so huge. Exonerated, you know, prison released, you know, convicted rapist, you know, charged with murder. How could the media not swarm there? Right. And then these people who, you know, saw that headline, they latched onto it and they just followed it. You know, they just went with it and followed it for 10 years and made this series out of it. As you're watching it, it's such compelling television. It draws you in so much that, you know, earlier we were talking about the suspension of disbelief.
Right.
You have that. But those moments that take you out where you're like, dude, that can't be real. It is. And you're like, dude, this is insane. Like, how does something like this happen? And it's so intense and strange and like horrifying all at once. You know, I mean, you have, you know, there's bones. The woman's bones are found on his property, right? And one specialist says, you know, I feel like this is the burn site because the majority of the bones are there. But this forensic anthropologist that is not connected with the, you know, the county sheriff department says, I cannot say that because the majority of bones that have been moved from one burn site to another, the bulk of bones are typically where they have been moved to, not where they've been moved from.
Right.
And he says that as a specialist, you know, in this department. And on top of it, you know, they had like dug up the pit with shovels and thrown them in wheelbarrows and then thrown them on the back of things. And, you know, so there's no way to tell if they've been like placed there.
Right.
Because
you destroyed the whole area.
Because you destroyed the whole area. You know, like there's just so much that you're just like, what the fuck is going on? Like how the fuck are they doing? Like, it's not even like, how are they getting away with this? It's like, dude, you guys are cops. Like I've watched enough cop shows that I know when I stumble on a pile of burnt bones, I don't touch it. Like, I don't touch it till the scientists show up.
Right.
You know, like, it's just, it's such a compelling piece of, like, work that it is staggering.
Right.
Like, and difficult to watch. Like, my wife, it just fills her with rage because she has very strong opinions about everything.
You just have to, it just, again, I don't have any tie. I've not watched it. I've not paid attention to it when it was national news. It's just hard for me to believe, and you have to suspend your belief to try and believe that even in a small town that every single judge and cop and blah 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 is tainted. You know what I mean? I don't believe that. Do I believe there are bad cops? Of course I do, because I've dealt with cops who, for no other reason, because I've tried to be as nice as I can be, are assholes.
Right.
You know what I mean? But for me to believe that a whole precinct
is
tainted.
This
is
what's
hard.
Really interesting about it. That is the defense that the police department has against this argument that it was planted, that he was framed, etc. What the defense sets forth and like what all the evidence points to is it's exactly that. It's not the precinct. It's not the whole police force. It's not the whole sheriff's department. It's literally like three guys.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, then shouldn't you as a jury have been like, well, if it's only three people and I get pulled over by one of these three people,
the problem is,
is anybody really going to believe that me, I just found this guy innocent, I went out and did something crazy, and just by happenstance, this guy happened to stop me. Like, that's jumping to some crazy conclusions.
That's the thing, though, is, like, the three guys are, like, the sheriff, the lead detective,
right,
and then, like, one, like, deputy.
Right.
And, like, I mean, there's a lot of things that are definitely, like, at the very least, like, super dirty pool.
Sure.
Like, there's some things that happened, especially in, like, the 90s and, like, early 2000s before he was exonerated that, like, are really fucked up. And I think what it points to more than anything is a sheriff's department that fucked up, like, in a really significant way, and instead of owning up to it, it has actively tried to dodge that.
And maybe that's true.
And that seems to be what's going on. It's just that this poor fucking guy is like caught in the middle of that. Like, he just happens to be the guy that they fucked up with.
Right.
And so, like, he's stuck. Like, and he's poor and he's uneducated. Like, he's not a smart man. He's not really a good guy. Like, I mean, the original thing that kind of got him onto the wrong side of the law was he like threatened this lady that was saying some nasty shit about him. But instead of being like, you know, bitch, fucking leave me alone, he like ran her off the road and pointed a gun at her. Like, you know, I mean, that's not the appropriate level of response.
I mean, nobody deserves to go to jail for something they didn't do.
Yeah, they
didn't do. It's not.
But
the weird thing about situations like that is they didn't. Typically, if you're in a small town, the jurors don't come from that town. They typically will come from somewhere else because that's tainted, because you can't form a good judgment off of a ton of media exposure and
something
all of that.
The jury attempted to get happened, you know, but they had already moved it to a different county.
Right.
You know, and they had said, like, you know, the Manitowoc, which is where it was, Manitowoc County can't participate in this investigation because we don't want to have this investigation colored with the hints of this.
Right.
And then all of the damning evidence against this guy was discovered when the sheriff's department butted into the investigation, even though they weren't supposed to, you know, and done by these three guys.
Right.
And magically, after searching his garage and his house for months, like 2 or 3 months, and not finding anything, these three guys show up, and all of a sudden there's a bullet, and all of a sudden there's a set of keys, you know, and it's just everything looks super shady, like, and super fucked up. And it's more than anything, it's so fascinating and so impossible to like tear yourself away from that at the very, very least, no matter what your opinion is on the spectrum, it is fucking compelling ass television. Like, I mean,
if those jurors didn't come from that county, that makes their decision even more retarded.
Yeah.
Because those if it's a county sheriff, typically he doesn't go out of his county to arrest or do anything to anybody. Yeah. You know, if he's a state police officer or something.
It happened in their county. Like, all of this happened in their county. But, like, if a separate county, because the woman who disappeared and then eventually was discovered, you know, dead or sort of discovered.
Right.
Like, because she was from this other county, that sheriff's department has stepped in. And then, like, that sheriff's department and their district attorney said, this group, you know, the Manitowoc Sheriff's Department, they will not participate in any way, shape, or form, except for on a material side. Like, if we need, like, baggies, you know, if we need body bags, if we need, you know, transportation, you know. And then they didn't, you know, after like 3 months of investigation, they haven't found fucking anything on this guy. Then all of a sudden Manitowoc steps in and boom, here's all the evidence against
him. But that's what I'm saying. Like, if the jury didn't come from the county that these police officers actually serve in, the excuse of saying...
They did, though. That's the jury.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, they... So they.
I thought you said they moved it.
They moved it. They moved the trial to a different county, but all the jurors come from his county. Like,
okay.
It's really weird.
That's weird. That's what I'm saying, because typically they won't... If it's in a small town like that, typically they'll find a jury from a different county.
Right.
Because then they won't have heard or known. I mean, you're always going to hear little things.
Well, and especially this thing, because it was like fucking all over the news. Like,
that's weird.
You know, I mean, people like Nancy Grace, may God smite her, was
she's so weird.
Oh, God, she's the most giant bitch on TV. God, I hate that show. I've been forced to watch that show 3 times in my whole life. And every time I've just been like, man, fuck this woman. I hope she fucking dies, like, through the whole show. Like, I hate that show so much. But, you know, it's just – it's super fascinating. Like, you know, if – at the very least, it's worth watching just because it's so fascinating.
I love stuff like that. Unsolved Mysteries. That was a, yeah. That was a cool show.
God damn it. I watched the shit out of that show.
It's just it's that – like I said, I'm not in the – whatever my opinions are. I don't know enough about it to see – even if I – you know, I'm not the type of person who –
even if you watch the documentary, you can't really create an informed
That's
opinion.
That's what I'm saying. Even
because you're only seeing one side
exactly.
of it.
That's my point. I'm not going to let one documentary sway me so much that I get my fucking, you know, I get a rise out of it and it angers me. And it's just not who I am.
Part of it, I think, is because it's so well done and because of how it presents itself, it's almost impossible not to. Like, you're watching it, you're just like, dude, this guy got fucking railroaded. And, like, having had friends that got railroaded through the system, you know, I had a friend that got in a car accident and, you know, he wrecked his car and the passenger, best friend in the whole world, died. Like, he did 12 years in prison for vehicular manslaughter because his friend died. You know, he probably could have gotten off with probation if his parents were richer and he had a better lawyer. But because he didn't, he just went to prison.
I'm never going to disagree with you to say that people who have money don't get off easier, because they always do. I mean, how many DUIs and all that shit does Lindsay Lohan have to get before she fucking goes
to prison?
How much bullshit can Justin Bieber do before he goes to jail?
Speaking of Bugatti Veyrons,
I mean, that's a truth. And I was trying to say it earlier. No system on earth is ever going to be perfect. None. It doesn't matter how many. Yeah. It doesn't matter how many rules or how many laws you try and put in place. It's never going to be perfect. Does that mean you should stop making rules or laws? Of course not. You should, because you still have to try. I mean, to say that one rule isn't going to solve the issue, so you shouldn't put it out there, you might as well say, well, then don't fuck have any rules, because people are going to break the law no matter what you do.
Right.
But you have to put shit in place to at least try and prevent things.
To try and curb it. Yeah. And then also so that there's consequences when someone breaks that rule. Like, we don't say people are going to murder no matter what, so murder's fine.
Yeah, just go kill somebody. Like, it's stupid. Like, you know, we're getting very political in this episode for some reason.
That's because of the stuff I'm watching. this week.
I have a gun in this home. I am totally for guns' rights. You know what I mean? But that's not to say that I'm not smart enough to say we should put shit in place just in case. You know what I mean? Right. I'm okay going through four different background checks because I'm normal. I'm okay having a gun, so nothing's gonna come up. It's not gonna affect you. Do all your background checks you want. Yeah, yeah, I don't give a fuck. Like, it's just absurd. Like, will these background checks stop crazy people? Probably not. But will it help curb some of those crazy people? Probably. Or two, then fuck. Who cares? What does it matter?
If it stops one person from fucking shooting up a movie theater in Aurora or like a fucking group of first graders in Sandy Hook, then why not?
Yeah.
One prevention is fucking worth an extra day of waiting for your gun. Like, it's going to be there. Right. It's a durable good. Like, it's not like, it's not like you're like, I bought my gun and it's going to spoil, you know?
I don't hear ultra liberals going, I'm taking your gun, bastard. Yeah. Like, I don't hear it. Like, dude, even, those calls come from only Republicans who in their brain, and I'm sorry if there's Republicans listening, but I highly doubt you're listening.
I don't think it's even Republicans. I think it's just like crazy gun people.
Maybe.
Those can come from anywhere. Like, you know, it's the people that you hear, Obama's going to take our guns. It's like, dude, he better fucking get on that shit. He's got like 8 months left, man. Like, he came out and in a speech is like, you know, I'm the president of the United States. I'm not taking your guns. By the way, I'm not taking your guns. You know, it's like, you know, what more do you want? Like,
but even if the president came out and said, I'm taking your guns, do you know how many Democrat people who own fucking guns would say, fuck you, you're not taking my guns?
Out of my cold, dead hands, Charlton Heston.
You just, nobody on any side of the spectrum has any support for that.
For gun confiscation. For none.
Yeah. No kind of support will you ever get for that. It doesn't matter what the fuck party you know what's interesting
to me is, like, the climate for this is so different than it was in, like, the 80s. I remember in the 80s when, like, gang violence was, like, way out of control. Like, you know, you saw on the news how, like, in Compton and, you know, Inglewood and whatever, you know, in the era of, like, NWA and Public Enemy and stuff, you know, gang violence was, like, this huge rampant problem of, like, you know, young black men killing young black men. And they would do fucking gun buybacks where you could come in, drop off your legal or illegal firearm, and the sheriff's department would give you money, and they fucking melted those guns down.
Right.
They destroyed them, and everybody was for it. Everybody was like, that is a great solution to, like, a really serious problem. That is literally gun confiscation and destroying that everybody across the board was totally into. And now you say, we want to make it harder for somebody to sell a gun over the internet with no background check. And people are like, they're going to take my guns. No, they're not. They're just, it's
what some insanity. What some of this does close is loopholes, because at some gun shows, from what I know, and I might be misspeaking, but you're supposed to register as a licensed dealer. That way you have to do background checks on everybody who you sell a gun to.
Right.
But in some states, you don't have to register to be a dealer to sell guns. So you just sell guns and you're just selling guns to everybody. You don't have to do background checks on anybody.
And like the internet loophole that he was talking about is like a very specific website that's effectively like the Craigslist of guns. So you go on, and the idea is that it's legal to sell a gun person to person with no background check, as long as you meet face to face and like they give you the money, you give them the gun, which honestly, I don't really have a whole lot of problem with, because that's very traceable. You can say, I am this person. I sold it to this person. If that person commits a crime and the cops say, did you sell this person that gun? You say, yes, it was no longer my gun. That person had it.
Right.
You know, what's been happening, though, is there's been a lot of interstate and mail, like, through that, where somebody finds a gun out of state and says, hey, I can't meet you. You know, I'll send you the money via PayPal and you just send me the gun.
Right.
You know, that's fine for, like, me. I do that all the time with comic books.
Right.
That's fine. Like, you know, that's the transfer of a comic book. Like, this is a weapon that's used as a tool to kill things, whether that be animals or targets or people. That's what it's for, you know? So
Should we be keeping tabs on that? Probably, yeah.
like I said, there's a gun in this home, and I'm all for gun rights. I just don't. I just am not crazy about it. I don't need. You know, I just don't understand it. I don't see the big uproar about it.
You know, I'm sure I've said this before. I personally can't own one for legal reasons.
No, it's the first time you've ever said that.
Okay, well, I personally can't own one for legal reasons. Like, you know, something happened in my past that I'm not super proud of. In a few years, I'll be able to get that expunged from my record because since that happened, I haven't committed a crime. You know, because it was like literally a one-time deal.
Sure.
Like, you know, as a consequence, I can't own one, but that doesn't mean I wouldn't. Like, I personally fucking love target shooting.
Right.
I love to go out and shoot guns, you know. And it's interesting. I talked with a friend a little bit about this. He owns quite a few guns. You know, he owns like an AR-15 and he owns a shotgun. He basically has like, you know, if you go on Call of Duty and you like scroll through the menu and there's like the pistol first and then the shotgun. Yeah. He basically has that. You know, he has like one of like kind of
progressively more deadly.
He has like one of each kind of thing.
Right.
You know? And that's why, is because he thinks that's cool. And he was talking to his therapist, you know, at some point in time. He's like, is that weird that I just love to go shoot things? And she said, no, that's a very human thing to be able to affect something that's far away from you, whether that be a video game where, you know, you're using a remote to make something on the screen do something different, or whether that's target shooting where you're shooting something that's, you know, 50 yards away and it explodes, or, you know, you get the target.
Right.
Like, that's a very human desire to affect change on something that's away from you, that's not a part of you. And I love that. I love doing that. Does that mean that I have to own all of the guns and be crazy about it?
No.
No, you can just be a normal person and have a gun. Like, Canada manages to do it without fucking killing each other nonstop. Like, they have just as many guns per capita as us. But for some reason in our culture, like, it's like we're all crazy. Like, it's like we all think we live in fucking
the West, Deadwood. Bro.
Yeah. We all live in, like, you know, fucking the OK Corral. And our solution to everything is to, like, shoot at shit.
Well, the funny thing is, you know, let's just posture for a second that the government is coming.
How did we do this?
I don't know. Let's just say the government one day is like, we're taking everybody's guns. You may have 50 guns in your home, let's just say. But how many drones does it take to take out one fucking house?
One.
Exactly. I don't even have to come to your fucking doorstep. I'm just on a joystick. Bam, your fucking house is gone.
It, like, that's like the argument that makes the least sense to me. This is to defend myself against the government. Like, there's a guy at work that was talking to another guy about where to buy cheap body armor. I'm like, what the fuck do you need body armor for? I looked at him. I was like, what do you need body armor for? He's like, well, you know, in case the government comes. I'm all, dude, if the government is going to raid your house and they know that you've got like 50 guns and fucking body armor, they're not going to show up with a SWAT team.
Yeah.
They're going to fucking show up with an armored transport and just fucking ram your house over. Like, we saw that in the 90s with Waco. The Branch Davidians were fucking holed up with like a gajillion machine guns. The government went in with like one SWAT team. Like, two of the guys got shot, or three of the guys got shot, or whatever. So what was the government's solution? Run them over with a tank. Like, they're not going to be like, oh, that guy's got 50 guns. Cool. Let's go knock on his door. They're just going to blow your house up.
It just,
like, burn it to the fucking ground.
It's preposterous to think that you could, as one, or even if you have 10 people, it's preposterous.
Even if you have 250 yeah. people, like, your militia could be fucking like 1,000 people, and it pales in comparison to like what even the shittiest, like, backwater third world government has for a military.
I personally think that, you know, maybe there are some soldiers who would be like, fuck that, I'm not going to follow the government, and they'll go do their own thing. But my opinion is that when you sign up to be a soldier, you're signing up to do what you need to do to defend the country and the government. You know what I mean? If your captain says, this guy's being a douchebag and he's going to kill your family, and because he's being crazy, he's got thousands of guns in his home, you're not going to just say, fuck you, Uncle Sam. You know what I mean? Typically, a normal soldier is going to follow orders.
Yeah.
You're not going to have the army just turn against the government all of a sudden. The government will have a full-blown army with way more toys than you can ever imagine.
And like you said, they don't even need a full-blown army. Right. They need like 20 guys to run some remote controls. It's like, I don't know. We got
all right. Let's go. Political. Yeah, let's go back to comic books. Sorry, you just listened to 30 minutes of political bullshit.
No, we're not.
That's true. It's just my fucking show.
Endlessly. Oh, it's your
it's
show
our,
now.
It's our
your show.
Show.
Oh,
here
okay,
we go. Here
okay.
We go. Here we go. At least I didn't try and kick John off.
Fuck you. I'm gonna shoot you.
I read Ringside.
You're about to fucking find out why I can't own a gun.
Gonna shoot me on my face, neck, and chest.
Yeah.
Ringside. It's really good.
It's about wrestling.
It is, but it's more about a wrestler. It's not really about wrestling in general. It's about, I've only read the first issue. I don't even know if there is a second or third issue.
I don't think
yet.
It's out yet.
So you're only at issue one so far, and it's about a wrestler who is no longer wrestling. He's come back. He was in Japan doing his thing, and for some reason, he's come back to the United States. You don't know why, but it doesn't really have to do with the wrestling industry.
It has more to
whole.
Do with like his
it
life.
Has to do with his life, which is cool. You still get some wrestling in there, and he's friends with wrestlers, and they throw around wrestling lingo. And I don't know if Joe Keating is like a wrestling fan, or if he like reached out to somebody and said, hey, you're in the industry. What do you like? How do I write this? You know what I mean? How do I include some wrestling stuff in there?
It'd be interesting to find out like which side of that he comes on.
Because you can just reading it, you go, this guy either knows about wrestling or somebody's telling him
about
wrestling.
Did a lot of research.
Right.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. It's really good.
Here's what I want to know.
Sure.
Did you see the Darren Aronofsky movie, The Wrestler?
I didn't with, what is his name?
Yeah, I'm drawing that blank.
He's in the villain in Iron Man. I know what you're talking about.
But you didn't see that movie?
No, I didn't.
So it sounds
I heard it was really good.
It was amazing.
I heard
like,
it was really good.
It sounds very similar though, where it's like this guy that like no longer wrestles. He's kind of down and out. You know, he does. I don't know if you ever saw the documentary Beyond the Mat.
Yes.
That kind of followed Jake the Snake mm-hmm. and kind of that weird like. You know, Jake the Snake was huge when I was a kid. You know, I fucking loved him. He had that bag with a giant boa constrictor in it. He'd fucking throw it on you when you lost. And that was quote unquote terrifying because the snake could kill you, which it totally wouldn't, you know. But, you know, and then you see him kind of like past that, like past where his body can physically really do this.
Right.
You know, he's wrestling, you know, in like a VFW.
It's because of all the drugs.
I mean, it's kind of. It's sad, you know, it's kind of hard to watch, you know, because here's this guy that I kind of idolized when I was a kid and now he's just kind of a sad old man, you know. I feel like, does Ringside feel like that or is it a little?
So he's, again, you don't know too much about why he's coming back to the United States or what happened to him previously, but it feels like he's out of the industry. He is an older guy. And some of his interactions, like he meets a younger wrestler and he gives him really good advice, like, you know, save your money, blah, blah, blah. So it kind of feels like that, but it takes a weird turn at the end that doesn't really have anything to do with wrestling. It's really
aliens?
It's no nothing that weird.
Because that would be pretty fucking cool. I would read that.
But I don't know if wrestling is. I don't know what it's turning into. It's good. The ending is really different than what I thought it would be. The whole book is different than what I thought it would be. But the ending is, you know, you'll have to read it, but the ending I don't think has anything to do with wrestling, but I don't know. But yeah, it seems like he's here to help somebody. You know, he's not all that famous. He doesn't want to be in the limelight anymore. It's a really good read. I would definitely recommend Ringside. It's a good read.
Nice. So, you know, I posted the picture of us getting ready to record on Instagram. I'm going to backpedal a little bit. Uh-oh. This is breaking on our Instagram.
We're backpedaling to guns again.
No, we're not backpedaling to guns. We're backpedaling a little bit to Deadpool PG-13.
Okay.
Matt said on our Instagram, please talk about the need for artists to maintain their integrity. So Matt, when you get to this in like 2 weeks, you're welcome.
Like, I think we did a pretty good job
yeah,
of that.
Yeah, I do. I'm just going to put your
welcome right here.
The my last on the shelf, and goddamn, this is going to be a long episode with no interviews, is Carver.
Oh, I finally
got my physical copy, and I read it, and it's amazing.
It's awesome.
It's awesome. I agree with you. Done and done.
All right, so I have one more on the shelf, too, and it's also...
No. Oh, Elf on the Shelf.
Here comes my wife. Yay.
Yay. Yay. Oh, usually we were just talking about guns for half an hour.
Usually when I say here comes my
about comics.
Usually when I say here comes my wife, she goes, "Yay."
She goes,
That's not what I sound like. Second of all, shut the fuck up.
That's funny.
Your mama sure loves your schooling.
Because you two like to butt rape each other.
So what?
Anyway, so speaking of full frontal nudity, we've been watching the Adult Swim cartoon Rick and Morty. If you're not watching, if you have any desire to see hilarious but perfectly done science fiction cartoons, you have to watch Rick and Morty. It is seriously one of the funniest cartoons I've ever seen. It's about this little boy named Morty and his grandpa, who's like his estranged grandpa named Rick. Rick is a mad scientist who's always drunk. He always has like kind of like spittle barf on like his lower lip. And when he talks, he's like, you know, Rick, like just all the time. Like he's kind of like vomit burping like all the time when he's talking. They have these fucking ridiculous adventures that like kind of tie into like awesome sci-fi tropes. It's an Adult Swim show, so it's like super, super vulgar. Like,
so let your 8-year-old kid see it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But it's really, really fun.
I'm starting a goddamn petition.
Oh, you would. it's totally worth watching. Like, it's super hilarious.
Nice.
I think we're like about 5 or 6 episodes into it. And I've watched the first 2 episodes like 10 times. Because it's like one of those things where like before we go to bed, we put something on and I just keep falling asleep in it. Not because it's bad, but because like I smoked way too much weed and I'm really tired. So it's really, really funny. Nice. I love Rick and Morty. So it's awesome. So we're going to take
a break. I'm good. Let's take a break. And we'll
come back with
it.
Old Man and finish up the show.
Yeah. Hopefully that doesn't have any political talk in it.
Really, Rick?
This is Joshua Williamson, writer of Nailbiter and Birthright. You are listening to Thinking Outside the Lungs.
We're back.
And we're back. So, old man segment.
Mexican word of the day, the Steelers suck.
I have a friend at work that's a huge Cowboys fan, and I was like, hey, are you familiar with the Mexican word of the day? I was like, you know, like the bishop, you know, if your girlfriend falls down, pick the bishop, you know. He's like, yeah, I'm familiar with it. I was like, I saw one that said sucks. And he's like, where are you going with this? I was like, it said sucks. The Cowboys suck. He's like a huge Cowboys fan. He's like, fuck you, man.
Side note, you're not watching playoff football, and it's been amazing these last 2 weeks.
I mean, I've heard that.
It's so good.
I mean, like I've said like a million times, I don't have cable or anything, so I don't get like
– Come over. Stop being a little bitch.
But I don't
– Come over.
I don't
want to
come over.
Watch Fear the Walking Dead. Watch some football. I'll feed you.
I don't want to come over and watch football for 3 hours, though, because then my kids get out of control, and it's
– That's not true. Only one of them gets out of control. And that's because she's little. She doesn't know any better.
I know.
The other three were just fine watching football.
Oh, I know. Bailey loves football. Bailey wants to watch football. Like, Bailey grew up – this is what's going to infuriate you, because when it comes to NFL football, I am a Steelers fan.
Oh, I know.
So, like, Bailey is, like, a big Steelers fan and a big Broncos fan. So she's, like, totally torn. Like, who do I root for today?
One of our old –
2 weeks ago today.
One of our old bosses is a big Steelers fan, and I've been sending him we have a group message, so all the people that we work
like –
some
we,
of the people
like
that
we do for the show, yeah.
Yeah. So I've been sending him Ben Roethlisberger rape memes this whole week.
And that's part of why I stopped watching football, by the way.
And one of them was – it was a picture of Ben, and it says – loves throwing picks and raping chicks.
Oh, my God.
It was terrible. But not to make light of the situation, blah, 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 whatever, because it's just funny to make fun of Ben Roethlisberger. That's the only thing.
So, like, when that happened, that's kind of when I stopped following football, is because I was like, you know, I don't need to give my money to a bunch of criminals, because that's me and I just can keep
There's
my money.
Just so
Not
many...
that I rape people, but
I There's am just a... so many other players that do good things that they don't need praise for. They just do them. You know what I mean?
I know. It's just it just bugs me. So anyway, old man pick.
Anyway, old man pick.
Old man pick. So
old man dick pick.
Nobody wants to see that. They'd be like, that's a dick. That's a dick pic?
So
Where
much
is it?
Hair.
So hairy and surrounded by fat. Is that like his belly button? Or what's... He's got like an innie for a dick.
Oh, shit.
Anyway, so... We're watching TV, Mel and I, you know, every night we basically watch the same two shows. Tuesday through Friday, we watch At Midnight and then The Daily Show. And usually at some point in there, Mel falls asleep, you know, like usually it's, you know, right after, usually it's when we're transitioning between At Midnight to The Daily Show, and then she watches The Daily Show the next day or whatever. So a few nights ago, she fell asleep, and I was like, you know, I'm not really tired. I'm gonna find a movie, you know. So I'm flipping through Hulu, and I don't flip through Hulu for movies very often
because
it's mostly for TV shows. But they had like this thing that said like essential documentaries, and you know how you can only see like the first like four, and you got to scroll over. So the first four were things I'd already seen, and there were things I liked, like Room 237, which is really cool, and all this other stuff. So I start scrolling over. And I find this movie called Filmage, okay? And Filmage is a documentary about this punk band from, like, the late 70s that still, in some ways, plays now, called The Descendants. Huge fan of The Descendants when I was a kid. I had remembered seeing, like, either, like, a preview or, like, a Kickstarter or something like that for this movie. And then just it kind of fell off my radar, but I was like, oh, man, I really wanted to watch this. So I put on Filmage, okay? It is like a really cool documentary about the formation of the band. It deals with all the people that were in the band. You know, there were several different, you know, lineups to the band. Cause I mean, it's literally been going since like 1978.
Right.
Okay. And it kind of centers around this like kind of duplicate story of the Descendants, who have Milo Aukerman, who's, you know, you're not familiar with any of this. Like, this would be a way better conversation with John.
That's
John would
okay.
know what I'm talking about. But
yes, I love him.
But Milo is
Milo's
like,
my dream.
Milo is your dream.
Yes, he's dreamy.
So Milo is kind of like the everyday guy. Like, he's a nerd. He wears glasses. He went on to be like a chemist and stuff like that. And their first album is actually called Milo Goes to College.
Nice.
Because that was like really weird in the punk community at that time. You know, and so when Milo went on to do his science shit, as they say in the movie, the band didn't really break up. It just kind of kept going with a different singer. It's a group called All. And like, in general, All is way less popular than Descendants because like Milo is very much so like the nerd on the stage. He's like the anti-lead singer. You know, he's a skinny, twerpy looking kid that's, you know, their songs weren't typical punk fare. It wasn't like, you know, anti-Reagan, like that kind of stuff.
Right.
They wrote what are considered like the first pop punk songs. So when you think of like a band like Blink-182 or like something like that, they don't exist if the Descendants didn't happen. Because the Descendants were the first band that used like melodies, you know, you know, that sang harmonies in their punk songs, that sang love songs, you know. They have this song called I'm the One, you know, I'm the one.
Oh, God.
You know, it's like...
Why don't you pause? Okay, they just heard it.
Okay, awesome. I'll send you a link. But, you know, they sang about things that, you know, we were actually going through.
Right.
You know, as a kid that listened to punk more in, like, the 90s and, like, the second wave of punk with the rise of bands like, you know, Rancid and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, it was... They were kind of like the old school punk, but they were like the first like real poppy old school punk. Instead of singing about politics and hating the cops and stuff like that, they were singing about like how the hot chick at school fucking thinks you're a nerd and she's never going to talk to you, even though you're the one that's like, you know, your boyfriend's a dick And I'm here picking up the pieces every time he fucking shits on you. Like, how can you not physically? Like, every time this guy breaks your heart, yes, you come yes. to me and cry on my shoulder. Like, how can you not see that, like, I'm the dude that you should be with?
Right.
Like, if you keep coming to me, why do you keep putting me in the fucking friend zone? Like, you know, so he
come to me and make me come.
I mean, that would be a side benefit, you know. I prefer a relationship before sex, but, you know. It's just he was singing about what I was going through in high school.
Right.
You know, he was singing about how I'm the fucking dumbass nerd kid that, like, even though I was in sports, even though I was in student council, even though I was all these things because I went to a super small school, like, none of the girls gave fucking two shits about anything I had to say. And I feel like looking at pictures of myself in high school, I was, like, significantly more attractive than I am now, you know? It's – you know, he – was kind of that face, and
right.
all didn't really have that face. But what really ties them together is this guy named Bill Silverstein, who, like, not only was in the Descendants and all, he also was, like, a drummer in Black Flag and was just, okay. like, a fucking machine of, like, drumming. Like, he was unbelievably talented, unbelievably driven, and really was the brainchild behind both bands and, like, creating, like, this really new, really inventive sound that was – you know, what became pop punk. And, you know, you have all these guys from, like, Rise Against and Blink-182 and, like, you know, just all the bands that you think of as, like, quote-unquote punk bands right. that are on the radio now.
Right.
Saying, if it wasn't for the Descendants, we wouldn't exist. You know, one of the guys says, I'm not going to say I ripped them off, but I'm going to say they heavily influenced us. You know, they were like this template that you could just be a normal guy and sing about chicks and stuff, but still be like a punk.
Right.
You know, still listen to punk music, still create really fairly aggressive sounding punk music.
I don't think you have to look a certain way in order to create something that's different from what you look like. You know what
no,
I mean?
No, I know. I'm just saying, like, it was such a departure.
Right.
From, like, you know, at the same time, like, in that period, like, the punk bands were, like, the Ramones,
right.
Black Flag, you know.
And the Ramones were just normal look. I don't, yeah. as far as well, what they, I can they remember.
Had, they kind of had a uniform though.
Right.
Like, you know, they wore jeans, they wore black leather jackets.
Right.
You know, when you look at videos of, like, Black Flag, here's, like, you know, by the time Henry Rollins comes around, here's this, like, fucking muscled guy
right.
covered in tattoos, wearing spandex shorts. Everybody's, you know, everybody's bigger, kind of bulky guys with no shirt on, fucking sweating like crazy, singing, you know, singing about fucking punching shit,
right.
fucking shit up and drinking beer, you know, bands like Fear. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen, like, the, you know, John Belushi was, like, a huge Fear fan.
Right.
And got them onto Saturday Night Live, and that just broke into a fucking riot. And they, like, cut off the feed, like, in the middle of the night, you know. Even though it's midnight, they're still like, this shouldn't be on TV. You know, I mean, there was, like, this mentality, like, kind of this tough guy persona that, like, punk music was, like, throwing out there at that time. And, like, the Descendants were the first band to kind of, like, diverge from that.
So... not a little on topic. What do you consider, and I know you think every teenage person goes through a phase of that they love the Doors. So what do you, because they have
That's
that kind
true.
Of, I'm not disagreeing with you. I love the Doors, and I'm not a teenager.
Then
I love the Doors.
Stop liking them.
No, I love the Doors.
No, you're just a kid.
No. would you, I mean, they gave off that, would, I mean, I know they're rock. Would you consider them kind of punky? I mean, they were.
So there's, like, this, there's this concept that this is going to be me, like, super nerding.
Right. No, that's
music.
Good. That's fine.
Like, there's this concept that punk obviously evolved from something else. Okay. At the time, like, in, like, the late 70s, really mainstream quote unquote rock and roll music was fucking garbage.
Right.
It was just like, it was effectively like the Justin Bieber of, like, rock and roll music. It's stuff that in, like, 40 years, people are going to look back at, like, the music that Justin Bieber is creating right now and be like, why did we like that? You know, the same.
I say that right now.
The same way. Well, I know, but there's people that like it for whatever reason.
Kidding.
Like, there's people that look back and say, what the fuck were we thinking with New Kids on the Block? You know,
there's,
like,
a lot of people that still love New Kids.
I know a few of those people. And in advance, I apologize, but holy fuck, what the fuck are you thinking? But, so punk, like, evolved from, like, this place where, like, people were like, this music is shit. Like, we don't want to listen to this.
Right.
The only way that we're going to be able to not listen to this is if we make it ourselves.
Right.
And, like, some of the bands that are kind of like that proto-punk sensibility are bands like the MC5 or like the Talking Heads, Blondie, you know, stuff like that. Like, you know, Debbie Harry's Blondie, like some of those first albums or like Patti Smith. Patti Smith did like this weird spoken word over like crazy instrumentalization that, you know, I mean, those are kind of like these crazy like proto-punk bands. Like, The Doors were way before that,
right?
But also kind of on the cusp of that, like in the like earlier 70s. Right. And I think a lot of the influences that evolved into punk come from bands like that, like a band like The Doors, or like a band like this. It's going to sound weird, but a band like the Beach Boys was like actually doing something that was so different and like so strange that it like piqued people's interest and kind of opened the door like ever so slightly to the, oh, we can do really whatever we want.
Right. We can, you know, step over the line a little bit.
Like, we don't have to play in stadiums. We can play in a bar, and I'm comfortable. Like, if I make like my, you know, if I make my rent or not, and like enough to buy a couple burritos, I'm happy with how the show went.
Right.
You know, and it developed this like cool, like DIY, like we are going to make our own music. Like, we hate what's out there, so we're going to make our own.
Right.
Like, they talk at the very beginning of the movie, they talk about how there was this band in, I believe, LA called The Last, that when you listen to them, they sound like, you know, kind of like a hard rock, you know. This is a super obscure band, but there's like this British rock band called The Horrors. They kind of sound like that, where they're just like real garagey, like real jangly guitars, real aggressive music. But that was like in 76.
Right.
And it wasn't something that anybody else was making at the time. And the guys that eventually became the Descendants were like, you know, we can make music like this.
Right.
Like, we can make something aggressive. We can make something, we can make something that speaks to who we are, as opposed to something that speaks to who, you know, the top 40 creator is. And like, sure, that music still exists today. There's a ton of music. I feel like the real, you know, the real love child of like punk rock in this generation is like underground hip hop. Like, that's where people are making fucking whatever they want to do. I mean, there's some amazing shit out there that I love.
It's just the way you described. I literally was watching a Doors video yesterday from their song Gloria. It's an uncut version that wasn't released to the public at the time, because they cleaned it up and did some things. See, it's like a rehearsal video almost, that they impose some things from other videos and just still photos, and you can hear at the end they're like, yeah, we should keep some of that. And so it's kind of a rehearsal thing, but during the whole thing, you know, it's the attitude that you're talking about when you're talking about the Descendants. There's girls coming up, and Jim's in the backseat of a car, and they're fucking grabbing his dick, and he's like, oh, yeah, like, he doesn't give a fuck about anything. You know what I mean? And that's attitude
is... I feel like this is the opposite of that. This is the guy that, like, no one cares. Like, he's...
Right. It's like, just, I'm talking attitude. Not necessarily that people clamor to these people. I'm just saying the attitude, like, I'm sure you'll know. They got kicked off of the Ed Sullivan Show.
Yeah.
Because...
For saying hi.
Yeah, because they were told specifically, you cannot say this line in this song. And Jim's like, okay, we won't say it.
And then he
went out and said and did what the fuck he wanted, and they said, okay, you're never coming back. And that, it's just, I only bring it up because that attitude sparked my memory and something that I literally was just watching yesterday, and it was cool.
You know, I mean, and I think there is that. There's those seeds that were planted, like,
right,
especially in like the 60s and the 70s, that were like, you know, there are bands, we can kind of do whatever we want. But what happened is, if something got popular, the record label system snapped it up.
It.
And like you're saying, here's this great cut of Gloria, which is a really good song.
Right.
I love that song. Here's this great cut of Gloria that never got released because it had to be sanitized first.
Right.
It had to be pared down. It had to be made shorter, had to fit in 3.5 minutes. It had to be cleaned up.
Yeah, it was
up.
9 minutes.
Yeah, it had to be cleaned up and done, you know, all these things done to it before it got to the radio. So what you hear of the Doors on the radio is very different from what they intended to create.
Right.
Whereas, you know, in the late 70s and into the 80s, when punk was like really starting to like rise up,
they were saying, we're not going to be a part of that label system. Right. We have no desire to do that. We figured out how to press our own records. We figured out that we can distribute through like zines and distros. And like, you know, I take, you know, I go on tour constantly. And with me, I take these photocopied catalogs, like the SST catalogs. You read them and it's like Black Flag's, you know, six albums and like St. Vitus's three albums, like all these fucking amazing bands. And the only way to get it was to get a hold of one of their catalogs, send them your like $3. Right. And then they would send you a tape in the mail, you know? And it was so different and it was so, you know, amazing and like enlightening to like music as a whole. And I feel like the world's kind of going through that now again, where people can like, sure, the record labels and like the radio, you're never going to hear the bands that I love and listen to that are out right now. Perfect example, this really great band called All Them Witches. Very southern rock kind of sound, but very doom metal-y kind of sound. They sing these weird like hybrids of like love songs, but like weird mystical stuff. Like it's like, all over the board, but I just love the sound of them. They're never going to be on the radio, but I can put them on my Spotify and fucking listen to them nonstop. And I can buy their album on the internet, and I can buy their shirts, and I can go see them in concert, and I can do whatever, and they can survive.
You're helping the cause.
Yeah, they can survive without ever having to be on the radio and without ever really even having to sell a CD or a record, because people can just listen to them like all the time anywhere on an MP3.
It's essentially what's going on with what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
I mean, no FCC and no body at this point has come on and said, you can't say these things, whether you're releasing it yourself or not.
There's one word I'm not allowed to say.
Yes, I'm the FCC of this fucking podcast. But there's nobody governing what we're doing here. We're just doing it. And we're not, I mean, we sell little things here and there, you know, not really, but yeah. And I mean, it's not because, like you said, we're not trying to get on the radio. I mean, it would be nice to eventually make money doing something we love.
I don't want
to
be on the radio because I couldn't do that. I would be I talk without swear words? But then, I am not a smart man.
XM, sir, XM.
See, but even that's not radio. That's a subscription service.
But that's my point is, they were doing things that they didn't want to be pinned down to, you know what I mean? They didn't want people saying, it's like the Deadpool thing. I'm creating something and I don't want somebody telling me that I need to create it some other way. Right. I don't need to dumb it down. I don't need to sanitize it. I'm creating it because it's what I feel. And I think that's cool.
And I think that was what, I mean, it really, I'm not going to lie. I watched the movie Tuesday night. I've been listening to Descendants all week, you know, because it was something that was huge in my childhood. And what's cool is I remember how I discovered the Descendants. You know, I went to a Christian school. I listened to a ton of Christian music, but even the Christian music that I listened to was like Christian punk and ska and hardcore and stuff like that. So like it was harder, quote unquote, harder edge. Like they were singing about Jesus, but it was really angry singing about Jesus. You know, it was really weird.
Kind of like POD.
Yeah.
They're hard.
I have a POD tattoo.
Yeah, they're harder. So,
seriously, I have a POD tattoo.
Nice.
Like
Disturbed, though they don't call themselves a Christian band at all.
Band, by the way,
I really like Disturbed. It's one of my favorite bands, and I don't give a fuck what you say.
They are so bad.
But they have songs about faith and religion and things like that.
And
as
what's
well.
Crazy, like I mean, we're talking about it's awesome. There's a few friends of mine that I know that listen to this show that are going to be like, oh god, here goes Gabe talking about 90s Christian punk again. Because I know, like, way more about this than, like, any reasonable human being should. Except for my friend Lane, who knows even more. But, I mean, we're talking about, like, the very fringes. Like, POD is, like, super mainstream. Like, they're on Atlantic Records
now,
or something like that now.
Or they were at the time. I don't know that they are. They're still putting out albums right now.
Even back then, though, like, you know, when you went to a Christian show, like, the headliner would be POD.
Right.
Like, they were a huge, huge band in that community, you know? I was listening to bands like World Against World or, like,
I've never heard of them.
And you never will.
I listened to Skillet a lot.
Skillet. Those are the bands that I, you know me. You know how I am how hateful I am about things. Those were the bands that I was like, that's fucking bullshit mainstream Christian music. I only listen to the cool underground Christian music.
Skillet was, when I started listening to Skillet, the first time I listened to him was in a,
was in a tiny little fucking like a school gym or something like that. It was at the time it wasn't mainstream and it felt harder to me.
Oh,
it was
no.
something that I was like, yeah, this is I can get into this.
I'll have to send you some other links of like some of the bands I listened to, but like I mean it was like I mean like death metal, like Christian right. death metal and like Christian like hardcore and Christian
I can't
like,
even listen to that non-Christian.
Oh, I know. I you know me. I
it's
love
just
that
too
shit.
Much.
I mean, and that's what I was that's what I was listening to. But I remember, you know, freshman, like probably my freshman, sophomore year in high school, there was this band, and you've probably heard of this band too, because they've gotten really huge since then. But MXPX was like a super big band in like the Christian scene. They came out with this album called Teenage Politics that was kind of like the Christian sanitized version of the Descendants, where like they would sing about like Jesus and like how girls broke their hearts, but it was punk, like it was had that fast, like aggressive, like down, you know, downstroke, you know, beat and stuff like that. And it was a punk album and I fucking loved it. And the way we used to discover music is that when we got the CD, we would look at the liner notes and they would thank the bands that either influenced them or that they played with.
Okay.
And it said, you know, first and foremost, my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and the Descendants. I was like, I've never fucking heard of the Descendants. So I went to like the tape store in the mall this fucking 800 years ago. And I started hunting for it, and I could only find one tape, and it was called Summary. And it was like this little green, weird green tape that had like a circle with lines going to like other little circles on it. And Summary was spelled like weird. I was like, well, I guess this is it. You know, this is the Descendants. Maybe there's another band called the Descendants. I have no idea. I took it home and like I put it in the tape player, and it fucking like changed my life. You know, because it was one of the first, like, aside from Metallica's Master of Puppets and Slayer's Decade of Aggression, it was like the third tape that I had bought that I hadn't bought at the Christian record store. You know, and it was, I mean, they sang song, like they have this song called Der Wiener Schnitzel.
Okay.
And like the song is literally like, I like food, food tastes good. Like, you know, juicy burger, tasty fries. Like, I mean, it's like just a stupid song about liking to go to the Wiener Schnitzel.
It's like the Bum Bum song. Right?
Yeah, like me and my friends, we always went to fucking Original Hamburger Sandwich, nice. Was the Wiener Schnitzel, you know? Or they, you know, they had a song about coffee, you know, okay. which is what me and my friends did. We drank shitloads of coffee and Jolt Cola and stuff. Like, you know, we were still little kids, so none of us drank or did drugs. Right. We fucking drank soda, you know? It was like really revolutionary to me, like to hear this band is like singing about the shit that I liked, and they didn't have to sing about Jesus either, like which I wasn't, you know, though I was like in that situation, kind of put in that situation by my parents and my situation, it wasn't necessarily like the biggest thing in the world to me. So I was just like, this is cool, like I can listen to this, like this, my mom's not going to be upset except for about the parents song, which is like, you know, parents, why don't they shut up, you know, I mean, they were singing like my life, you know,
right.
And so that's seriously like the line, that's just so funny. You know, so I, you know, I tried to hunt down more of their stuff, which was like fucking impossible because they hadn't made an album since like the 80s, you know, and they were like all on vinyl and, you know, there was no internet.
Right.
So, which is fucking weird to say out loud.
No,
but
I grew up in that same time period. I didn't have internet.
So watching this movie, I was just like, oh, fuck yeah. I remember that. Like, I remember those days. I remember, you know, growing up and being like, this band is the shit. Like, this is absolutely everything I fucking love about music. And, you know, I don't listen to as much punk anymore,
right?
Because I'm not a teenager, you know. I don't have to worry about the girl in high school, you know, shitting on me physically and emotionally.
Now because, your wife shits on
because
you.
Because I have a wife. And, you know, she's awesome. She yells at me, but I love her to death.
Physically, I meant, not metaphorically.
I mean, what I do in the bedroom is my business.
Exactly.
If I want the Cleveland Steamer, I just ask. No.
I don't
want the Cleveland Steamer. I know.
No, I don't want the Cleveland Steamer.
Just, you know, I don't have to worry about those things anymore.
Right.
So the music doesn't relate to me quite as much. You know, I want to listen to something that has a lot less to do with like life. Music's more escapism for me now.
Right.
But, you know, I revisited it
because of the movie. And it was really cool to like just dive back into that again. Be like, man, I remember this. Like, this was really cool. I found out that you can find my old band on Spotify this week too, which is fucking hilarious. But not,
I'll never listen to it.
You don't
never, ever,
don't.
Ever,
I would be
ever.
So embarrassed. It was terrible. I was in the car with Hannah. I was like, you want to listen to Daddy's old punk band? She's like, sure. And I put it on and the first song ended. She's like, what was that?
She's like, can we change this, please?
she did ask that, so.
No, I don't. I'm you know, like you, one, first things first, I don't listen to a ton of music anyways. I especially don't listen to a ton of anything hard. No, yeah. Rock, no, you know, I just don't. I'm never in the mood to be like, ah, you know, even though I don't listen to anything that was really, really hard.
Well, I mean, I really don't either anymore. Like, I mean, when I talk about listening to metal, it's not, you know, people, I know people are thinking, you know, fucking Iron Maiden and like, you know, Metallica and stuff. When I listen to metal, it's
even
like
Metallica, it's like most super, of their stuff wasn't super,
but
super
what
hard.
I listen to is like super, like right. atmospheric, like stoner and right. doom metal, which is like, you know, literally all the sound songs sound like this. And like, it's just chill out music.
Most
for
of what I listen to anymore is Spanish music that probably came out in the 50s, or love music. I mean, I love as
like
much
love music or make
no
love,
love music. Like I love. I come from, like you said, a tiny town. And you'd never look at me and say, that guy's a country boy. But I really am. I love Brad Paisley. I love Kenny Chesney. I love all of that shit. And I'm more inclined to listen to something like that and have my son listen to it and have my son listen to Spanish music that is amazing, even though even my family, my brothers are like, what the fuck are you – like one of my brothers listens to older Spanish music. But I got it all from my dad. I love everything he listens to. And it's just that if I do listen to music, that's what I'm listening to.
It's
to,
funny
because
like my like as I've gotten older, my musical tastes have become like super eclectic. Like I listen to a lot of like country, but it's all like outlaw country.
Right.
Like I love, you know, Hank Williams III or like Waylon Jennings, that kind of stuff. You know, I still listen to some punk and hardcore, not very often anymore. I listen to a lot of doom and like, you know, stoner metal. I listen to a lot of blues and
love blues.
I listen to a lot of like old R&B, like R&B from like the 50s and 60s. But because of my dad, like I grew up listening to like the Texas Tornadoes and like, you know, like Little Joe, E La Familia and stuff like that. And I can't even say their names right. Like, I don't even care. I don't know what they're singing about. Doesn't matter. I put it on and it reminds me of my dad and that's it.
Right.
That's all I need it for. Like, I don't need to know what they're singing about. I enjoy the music. It's the same way you are. You know, you're listening, you understand it.
Right.
But you're listening to music from like the 50s and 60s. Yeah. And, you know, I'm listening to music from like the 60s and 70s because I got it from my dad.
Right.
You know, and so much of my music taste comes from my dad in like this really weird way.
It's just, it's familial. I don't, you know, I don't even need to know who, I'll know the band name and then there's on YouTube there's like an hour of all of their songs and I'll just put it on and I'll listen to it while I'm doing other stuff. And it's like you said it's familiar. It reminds me of my dad. It reminds me of being home and it feels good. Like I don't that to me, if I'm listening to music, that's what I want to feel.
Like I said, music for me is like escapism now. Like, and though the music I listen to your ear may sound more aggressive compared to what I used to listen to, it's significantly less aggressive. You know, a band like Down, which is like Phil Anselmo from Pantera's like side project, you know, I'll put that on my Spotify and hit shuffle and like, sure, the songs are about, you know, drinking and marijuana and depression, but
a lot of country songs are about
it's
drinking.
Like, it's like, you know, it's kind of down tempo compared to what I used to listen to. And it's music that just kind of makes me feel good, which is super confusing to a lot of people because people are like, he's singing about how depressed he is. I'm like, yeah, but I'm not. And this is good music.
Well, and some of that isn't necessarily just the lyrics. It's the feeling that you get from the melody, from the tune, from what you're hearing. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not necessarily what he's saying all the time. It's just the feeling you get from it.
As what's weird is, as somebody that, you know, I've been in bands on and off through like most of my life and never learned how to play an instrument.
You're in a three-man band now.
Like, not the same. Like, you know, I was always the songwriter and singer,
quote unquote, you know?
Right.
So for me, the lyrical content of music is like way more important than it is for most people. I think it's a big part of why I balk at pop music is because when I hear it, I'm just like, dude, they're fucking saying nothing. Like, this is such worthless trash.
And that's why, you know, sometimes when I listen to, if I'm listening to Lil Wayne or something like that, what gets me is the rhythm, is the beat. Like, that gets me up tempo. And that's more, sometimes for me, more what I want to hear is just, I'd be okay with just, you know, music and no lyrics if it kept me kind of going, you know what I mean? Because the Doors, they have fucking 3 minutes of lyrics and then another 6 minutes of instruments. Just
like music.
Well, sir.
That sounds like the end of the show.
Yeah,
I hear kids going
let's
wild.
Finish.
So we should.
Wow. We didn't get to talk about it. R.I.P. Alan Rickman. And I don't know what Lemmy's last name is. I don't even know.
Lemmy Kilmister from Motorhead.
There you go.
Like, it's funny because, like, I'm just going to segue for this for a minute, but Lemmy, Alan Rickman, David Bowie,
right,
all passed away very recently between the last time we recorded and this time. You know, it's each death hits different people different ways.
Right.
My wife was really affected by Alan Rickman, different friends, David Bowie. For me, it was Lemmy because I've been listening to fucking Motorhead since I was like 12, 13 years right. old, you know? And, you know, it's that same thing. The things that speak to you are the things that you become attached to. And when you see, you know, I said to Nate, who doesn't listen, fuck that guy. That I know I'm middle-aged because the people that created the things I loved in high school are starting to pass away. Yep. And, like, it's a bummer, but it's true, and it's going to keep happening. But it's a good chance for us to look back and look at all the fucking amazing things that those people gave to us. So
tell them where they can find us, and let's get out of here.
Yeah, so you can
our house is being ravaged right now.
You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thinkingoutsidethelongbox. I still feel like a little choked up. Like, that's shit. Facebook.com/thinkingoutsidethelongbox. On Twitter, Instagram, Periscope. I made our first Periscope video in a while today. At Outside Longbox. Shit, pause.
Why?
What's our phone number?
Oh, shit.
I haven't seen
it. I don't know if they're screaming because they're having fun or if they're screaming because some shit's going crazy.
It doesn't matter. We'll be done here in a second either way. Okay, I got it right here. You can find us on email. You can send us an email at outsidethelongbox@gmail.com, or you can leave us a super sexy message at 970-573-6148. We'd love to hear what you have to say. If you have an opinion on literally anything we've talked about in this episode, please call us and leave a message. I really hope.
I don't give a fuck who it is.
No, I mean, I really hope that I don't have to, like, listen to, like, a 2-hour diatribe about how, like, Obama's going to steal our guns.
Here we go.
But that would be, like, super hilarious.
If I get 1 minute into that, I might fucking delete it. I have the power. All of this stuff is being forwarded to me, though it's not my personal phone. So don't fucking, like, don't be like, oh, well, I'm calling Juan, because you're not calling me. It's just coming to me.
Yeah. Anyway, like, you can call us and leave a message. Literally anything that you want to talk to us about, you know. If you want to talk to us about anything that we talked about on the show, or, like, you know, why does my dick smell funny? Like, you know, I mean, anything. If you just want to say hi, yeah. We'd love to hear your voice. It's a good way to keep interacting. Please interact with us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You know, like we did today, we talked to, you know, we present the comments. When we post something, we try right. to talk about what you guys said. So we love having you guys on the show in that way. So the most important people that we have on the show every single week are Matt, Marika, and Dom, our 3 Patreon supporters. If you would like for us to include you in that very exclusive group of people, and we will literally
get fun prizes.
We will literally talk about you every single show. Then you
sometimes disparagingly.
Yeah, sometimes we will talk about how you hate Prometheus and we don't care. You can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/TOTLB. For as little as $1 a month, you can join us, help us, like, fund, you know, buying equipment, traveling to different places. You know, con season is coming up again here in a few yep. months, and we're going to be doing a lot of traveling for that. So, you know, if you like what you hear, please join us on Patreon. We'd love to have you as part of the team. I will actually be making a very Descendants heavy deep culture
nice,
video this
nice.
Week sometime, because I work nights this week. So, ding, lots of spare time.
If you can't afford it, or you just don't want to give us money because we're idiots, I'm okay with that. You can support us by going to Amazon, barrenspace.com/Amazon. Same Amazon as normal. We just get a little bit of a kickback for pretty much everything you buy. For example,
if you wanted to send a 55-gallon drum of personal lubricant to those guys in Oregon, bingo.
You know that
you
that,
can do it and help us.
That takes out the aspect of I'm giving these guys money and I don't know what they're doing with it. So you know what I mean? So hopefully you'll support us. Hopefully you like what you hear.
Yeah. So also with that said, if you create something, we talked a lot about artistic integrity today. You're welcome, Matt. We fucking love the creative process. We love people that make music, make movies, that make TV shows, that make comic books. You know, at the beginning of this podcast, I love to fucking joke and grouse and bitch about how this was a comic book podcast, but really, this is truly a pop culture podcast.
One for one.
If you make anything cool, and it doesn't have to be cool to me, it doesn't have to be cool to Juan or John, it can just be cool to you, please hit us up. We'd love to talk to you about how you made it, what you're doing, how we can find what you're doing, how we can read your comic book, how we can watch your, like, fucking, what may be the next Clerks, who fucking knows. We'd love to have you on the show. And if you don't, if you're nervous and don't want to be on the show, fucking keep creating anyways. Fuck those people that tell you can't make it, because you can make it. And you know how I know? Because I make this goddamn podcast every other week, motherfucker! But
wow.
Yeah. Anyways, with that said, I'm Gabe.
I'm Juan.
I'm John. And this has been the 35th episode of Motherfucking Thinking Outside the Long Box.
You're very excited.
Just another day in the world.
This episode of Thinking Outside the Long Box was brought to you by the letters B and S and the number 666, and our fans, Matt, Marika, and Dom. Thanks, guys, and be sure to support us on Patreon at patreon.com/TOTLB.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast. Join us on Facebook and Twitter to get behind-the-scenes information for exclusive content and to be notified when new episodes are available. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual and do not necessarily represent or reflect those of the Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast, Barrenspace Productions, its partners, or affiliates. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is made available by its creators, Juan, John, and Gabe. The podcast is edited and produced by Juan, and Albi is the co-executive producer. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is a Barrenspace production.